के बड़े बड़े मंसूबों पर तेजी से अमल दरामद कर रही है। पेट्रोलियम और कुदरती वसाइल के वफाकी वजीर चौधरी नौरेज शकूर खान ने कहा कि लोग अपने मसाइल का हल चाहते हैं और साहिवाल के अवाम मुल्क की तरक्की के लिए सदर, वजीर आजम और मौजूदा हुकूमत का भरपूर साथ देंगे। जिले नाजिम राय हसन नवाज खान ने जिला साहिवाल के मसाइल पर रोशनी डाली। इस मौके पर आला नस्ल के मवेशी जिनमें घोड़े, गाय और भैंसे शामिल थी, नुमाइश के लिए पेश किए गए। नेजाबाजी, रस्साकशी और झूमर नाच का मुजाहरा अवाम की खुसूसी तवज्जो का मरकज रहा। इस मौके पर वजीर आजम मीर जफरुल्ला खान जमाली, वफाकी वजीर इत्तलात शेख रशीद अहमद और चौधरी नौरेज शकूर खान ने इनामात तकसीम किए। वजीर आजम ने सईद कॉलोनी और मुल्लिका आबादियों के लिए सुई गैस की फराहमी के मनसूबे का इफ्तिताह भी किया। इस आबादी को गैस की फराहमी एक मरबूत प्रोग्राम का हिस्सा है, जिसके तहत साहिवाल की मुख्तलिफ कॉलोनीज में 2 करोड़ रुपए की लागत से कुदरती गैस फराहम की जा रही है। शमाला जाफरी, पाकिस्तान टेलीविजन न्यूज, साहिवाल। वजीर आजम मीर जफरुल्ला खान जमाली ने कहा है कि मौजूदा हुकूमत आने वाली नस्ल के लिए पाकिस्तान को मजबूत और मुस्तहकम बुनियाद फराहम करने के प्रोग्राम पर अमल पैरा है। वो पाकपतन में मुमताज सियासी शख्सियत जनाब गुलाम मोहम्मद अहमद खान मानिका की रिहाइश गाह पर इलाके के अमायरीन के इज्तम से खिताब कर रहे थे।
कोशिश हमारी यह है कि जो जो वक्त गुजरता जाए, जो पिछली नस्ल आ रही है उनके लिए हम एक अच्छा और बेहतर पाकिस्तान छोड़ के जाए, मगर वो अच्छा और बेहतर मुस्तहकम और मजबूत पाकिस्तान सिर्फ बातों से नहीं होता, सिर्फ इशारों से नहीं होता, सिर्फ झूठे वादों से। और वो कहते हैं कि जी ठीक है, मैं वादा करके जा रहा हूँ, और बाद में फिर वो वादा पता नहीं कहाँ चला जाता है, लोग चले जाते हैं, टाइम गुजर जाता है, और ये अवाम, अल्लाह की अवाम मखलूक जो है, आप लोग इंतजार करते हैं कि फिर कोई अच्छा शख्स आ जाएगा, फिर वो वादे शुरू हो जाते हैं। तो कोशिश पिछले 1.5 साल में मैंने, मेरी गवर्नमेंट ने और हम दोस्तों ने यही किया है, यही कोशिश है कि किसी से झूठा वादा न करें। अगर कोई वादा पूरा कर सकते हैं तो जरूर करेंगे, और इंशाल्लाह पूरा भी होता है।
कौमी असेंबली के रुकन मियां मोहम्मद रजा खान मानिका और जनाब गुलाम मोहम्मद अहमद मानिका ने वजीर आजम का खैर मकदम किया और इलाके के मसाइल हल करने के सिलसिले में अपनी तजावीज पेश की। वजीर आजम मीर जफरुल्ला खान जमाली ने पाक पतन में अजीम रूहानी बुजुर्ग और सूफी शायर हजरत बाबा फरीदुद्दीन गंज शकर रहमतुल्लाह अलैह के मजार पर हाजिरी दी। वजीर आजम ने मजार पर चादर चढ़ाई और फातिहा खानी की। दरगाह के सजादा नशीन दीवान मौदूद मसूद ने वजीर आजम की दस्तारबंदी की। इस मौके पर मुल्क की सलामती, इस्तेहकाम और मुस्लिम उम्मा के इत्तेहाद के लिए खुसूसी दुआ की गई। वजीर आजम ने मजार की तौसी और हजरत बाबा फरीदुद्दीन यूनिवर्सिटी के क़याम के सिलसिले में हर मुमकिन तआवुन की यकीन दहानी कराई। वजीर आजम मीर जफरुल्ला खान जमाली ने कहा है कि हम सियासत में रवादारी, भाईचारे और ईमानदारी को अपना नस्बुल ऐन समझते हैं। वो जिला साहिवाल में कौमी असम्बली के रुकन राना तारक जावेद की रिहाइश गाह पर इज्तिमा से खिताब कर रहे थे। उन्होंने कहा कि सियासी मामलात के हल के लिए मशावरत बेहतरीन तरीका है। वजीर आजम ने कहा कि ऑपोजिशन और हुकूमत एक गाड़ी के दो पहिये हैं, उन्हें मिलजुल कर काम करना चाहिए। उन्होंने कहा कि ऑपोजिशन की तरफ से तनकीद को बर्दाश्त करना चाहिए, क्योंकि तनकीद से इसलाह होती है, लेकिन महज इख्तलाफ की खातिर इख्तलाफ नहीं होना चाहिए। इस्तेमाल से खिताब करते हुए कौमी असेंबली के रुकन राना तारक जावेद और दूसरे मुकर्ररीन ने हुकूमत की पॉलिसियों को सराहा।
मकबूजा कश्मीर में भारतीय फौज ने रियासती दहशतगर्दी की कार्रवाइयों में मजीद 4 कश्मीरियों को शहीद कर दिया है। उनमें से 2 अफराद को थन्ना मंडी के इलाके में नाम नेहाद तलाशी की कार्रवाई में और बाकी 2 को वेरीनाग में शहीद किया गया। कुल जमाती हुर्रियत कॉन्फ्रेंस के चेयरमैन सैयद अली गिलानी और जम्मू और कश्मीर पीपल्स लीग के सरबराह शेख अब्दुल अजीज ने आलमी बरादरी से कहा है कि वो कश्मीर का मसला कश्मीरी आवाम की ख्वाहिशात के मुताबिक हल कराने के लिए ज्यादा मौसर किरदार अदा करें। सैयद अली गिलानी ने पुलवामा के इलाके खरियू और सोपूर के इलाके तजार शरीफ में और शेख अब्दुल अजीज ने पुलवामा में लोगों के इज्तमा से खिताब करते हुए मकबूजा कश्मीर में भारत की रियासती दहशतगर्दी की शदीद मजम्मत की। हुर्रियत कॉन्फ्रेंस के चेयरमैन ने उन 3 अफराद के सोगवार खानदानों से हमदर्दी का इजहार किया जिन्हें भारतीय फौज ने हाल ही में सरियों में शहीद कर दिया था। کل جماعتی حریت کانفرنس کے رہنما غلام نبی سمجھی نے صدر جنرل پرویز مشرف کے بیان کو سراہا ہے کہ کشمیر پاکستان اور بھارت کے درمیان بنیادی مسئلہ ہے۔
ہم صدر پاکستان جنرل پرویز مشرف صاحب کے بیان کو سراہنا کرتے ہیں جنہوں نے کہا کشمیر مسئلہ ایک کور ایشو ہے اور اس کو پرائیورٹی دے کر حل کرنا چاہیے۔ اس کے لیے دونوں سربراہوں نے اصولی طور معاہدہ بھی کیا ہے۔ ہم امید کرتے ہیں کہ بھارت کے حکمران بھی یہاں کے لوگوں کے دل کی دھڑکنوں کو بھانپ کر یہ نہیں اسے دیوار پا لے کہ اس زیرین مسئلے کو حل کرنا ہے، کیونکہ بہت خون بہ چکا ہے۔
عراق کے دارالحکومت بغداد میں دو بم دھماکوں میں چار امریکی فوجی ہلاک ہو گئے ہیں۔ شہر کے جنوب مشرقی علاقے میں ہونے والے دھماکے میں تین فوجی ہلاک اور ایک زخمی ہو گیا۔ دوسرے دھماکے میں ایک فوجی شدید زخمی ہو گیا جو بعد میں اسپتال میں دم توڑ گیا۔ اتحادی انتظامیہ نے اگلے ہفتے سے عراق ایران سرحد پر 19 میں سے 16 چوکیاں بند کرنے کا اعلان کیا ہے۔ امریکی سول ایڈمنسٹریٹر پال بریمر نے کہا ہے کہ بند کی جانے والی چوکیوں کے علاقے میں 16,000 بارڈر گارڈز تعینات کیے جا رہے ہیں۔ یہ فیصلہ دوسرے ملکوں سے عراق میں مبینہ دہشت گردوں کی آمد روکنے کے لیے کیا گیا ہے۔ روس میں صدارتی انتخابات کے لیے ووٹنگ ہو رہی ہے۔ 51% سے زیادہ ووٹرز نے اپنا حق رائے دہی استعمال کیا۔ رائٹرز نے الیکشن کمیشن کے ذرائع کے حوالے سے بتایا ہے کہ انتخابات میں صدر پوٹن کی کامیابی یقینی نظر آتی ہے۔ انتخابات کے موقع پر سخت حفاظتی انتظامات کیے گئے ہیں۔ ملک بھر میں اہم تنصیبات پر اور امن و امان برقرار رکھنے کے لیے 3,00,000 پولیس اہلکار تعینات کیے گئے ہیں۔ روس میں 10,90,00,000 رجسٹر ووٹر ہیں جن کے لیے 95,000 پولنگ اسٹیشن بنائے گئے تھے۔ اسپین کی حکومت نے کہا ہے کہ القاعدہ تنظیم نے میڈرڈ کے دھماکوں کی ذمہ داری قبول کر لی ہے۔ اسپین کے وزیر داخلہ نے بتایا ہے کہ پولیس کو ایک ویڈیو ٹیپ ملی ہے جس میں عربی زبان بولنے والے ایک شخص نے کہا ہے کہ جمعرات کے دھماکے القاعدہ نے کیے ہیں۔ انہوں نے بتایا کہ حکومت ابھی تک اس شخص کی شناخت نہیں کر سکی جس نے میڈرڈ کے دھماکوں میں القاعدہ کے ملوث ہونے کی ذمہ داری قبول کی ہے۔ تاہم وزیر داخلہ نے کہا کہ حکومت کو یہ بھی شبہ ہے کہ علیحدگی پسند باسک تنظیم ایٹا ان دھماکوں میں ملوث ہے۔ دھماکوں کے شبے میں مراکش سے تعلق رکھنے والے 3 اور 2 بھارتی باشندوں کو گرفتار کر لیا گیا ہے۔ اسپین میں آج عام انتخابات کے لیے پولنگ بھی ہو رہی ہے اور حکمران جماعت کو دھماکوں کی وجہ سے مشکل صورتحال کا سامنا ہے۔ چین کی پارلیمنٹ نے آئین میں 13 ترامیم کی منظوری دی ہے جس کے تحت نجی جائیداد کے تحفظ اور انسانی حقوق کو آئین کا حصہ بنایا گیا۔ یہ منظوری بیجنگ میں نیشنل پیپلز کانگریس کے سالانہ اجلاس کے آخری دن دی گئی۔ ترامیم کے حق میں 2,863 اور مخالفت میں 10 ووٹ ڈالے گئے۔ چین میں 1949 کے انقلاب کے بعد آئین میں پہلی مرتبہ یہ ترامیم کی گئی۔ اسرائیل کے ساحلی علاقے اشدود میں 2 دھماکوں میں 7 افراد ہلاک ہو گئے ہیں۔ اسرائیلی ریڈیو کا کہنا ہے کہ دونوں خودکش دھماکے ہو سکتے ہیں۔ غزہ میں اسرائیلی فوج کی فائرنگ سے حماس کے 3 رکن شہید ہو گئے ہیں۔ اطلاعات کے مطابق ان افراد کو کرنی بارڈر کراسنگ کے قریب شہید کیا گیا۔
فائرنگ کا یہ واقعہ ایسے وقت پیش آیا ہے جب اسرائیلی اور فلسطینی وزراء اعظم کے درمیان بات چیت کے لیے کوششیں ہو رہی ہیں۔ وزیر اعظم احمد کرے اور اسرائیلی وزیر اعظم ایریل شرون کے معاونین کے درمیان آج بات چیت ہو رہی ہے جس میں سربراہ اجلاس کی تاریخ اور ایجنڈے کو حتمی شکل دی جائے گی۔ اسرائیلی ذرائع کے مطابق دونوں وزراء اعظم کے معاونین کی بات چیت میں کامیابی کی صورت میں سربراہ اجلاس منگل کو ہو سکتا ہے۔ مقبوضہ بیت المقدس میں اسرائیلی کابینہ کا اجلاس ہوا۔ وزیر اعظم ایریل شرون نے اجلاس کو جناب کرے سے اپنی متوقع ملاقات کے بارے میں آگاہ کیا۔
ایران نے ایٹمی پروگرام کے معائنے سے متعلق بین الاقوامی ایٹمی توانائی ایجنسی کے مشن کو تہران کا دورہ کرنے سے روک دیا ہے۔ ایرانی وزارت خارجہ کے مطابق یہ فیصلہ ادارے کی طرف سے ایران کے خلاف مذمت کی قرارداد منظور کرنے کی وجہ سے کیا گیا۔ ترجمان نے کہا ہے کہ ایران ایٹمی ہتھیاروں کے عدم پھیلاؤ کا پابند رہے گا، تاہم معائنہ مشن سے متعلق آئندہ لائحہ عمل کے بارے میں اس وقت کچھ نہیں کہا جا سکتا۔
بلوچستان کے وزیر اعلیٰ جام محمد یوسف نے سانحہ کوئٹہ میں متاثر ہونے والی املاک کے مالکان میں امدادی رقوم کے چیکس تقسیم کیے. وزیر اعلیٰ نے یقین دلایا کہ حکومت اپنے وسائل کے اندر رہتے ہوئے متاثرین کی بحالی کے لیے ہر ممکن اقدامات کرے گی. انہوں نے لوگوں پر زور دیا کہ وہ کوئٹہ کی بھائی چارے اور اپنائیت کی قدیم روایت کو قائم رکھیں. وزیر اعلیٰ نے متاثرہ 11 دکانداروں میں 50 لاکھ روپے کے چیکس تقسیم کیے. دوسرے متاثرین کو بھی جلد ہی امدادی رقوم فراہم کر دی جائیں گی. ایف سی کالج لاہور کے یوم تاسیس کی تقریب سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے وزیر اعلیٰ چودھری پرویز الہی نے کہا کہ حکومت تعلیمی معیار کو بلند کرنے اور صوبے میں ایجوکیشن نیٹ ورک کو وسعت دینے کے لیے مربوط حکمت عملی پر عمل درآمد کر رہی ہے. انہوں نے کہا کہ نجی اور سرکاری دونوں شعبوں پر یہ ذمہ داری عائد ہوتی ہے کہ معاشرے میں تعلیم کا عمل فروغ پائے. انہوں نے کہا کہ بچیوں کو تعلیم کی طرف راغب کرنے کے لیے 200 روپے ماہانہ وظیفہ دیا جا رہا ہے اور صوبے کے 14 پسماندہ اضلاع میں ایجوکیشن سیکٹر ریفارمز پروگرام کے تحت پائلٹ پروجیکٹ شروع کیا گیا ہے. وزیر اعلیٰ نے کہا کہ صوبے کے 34 ضلعوں میں پہلی سے پانچویں جماعت تک طالب علموں کو مفت کتابیں فراہم کرنے کا سلسلہ شروع ہو چکا ہے. انہوں نے کہا کہ ان اقدامات سے صوبے میں انقلابی تبدیلیاں آئیں گی.
کراچی میں اعلیٰ سطح کے اجلاس میں صوبے کے ترقیاتی منصوبوں اور قومی اقتصادی کونسل سے متعلق امور پر تفصیلی غور کیا گیا. سندھ کے وزیر اعلیٰ سردار علی محمد مہر نے صدارت کی. وزیر اعلیٰ نے بتایا کہ لیاری ایکسپریس وے کے منصوبے پر 2,87,00,000 روپے سے زیادہ کی رقم خرچ ہوگی اور یہ منصوبہ اگلے سال جنوری تک مکمل ہو جائے گا. منصوبے کے پہلے مرحلے میں 13,843 متاثرین کو 80-80 گز کے پلاٹ اور 50,000 روپے دیے جائیں گے. اس میں سے 40% متاثرین کو پلاٹ فراہم کر دیے گئے ہیں. کراچی کو روزانہ 10 کروڑ گیلن پینے کا پانی فراہم کرنے کا منصوبہ کے 3 پر 6,10,00,000,000 روپے خرچ ہوں گے.
کراچی میں نیشنل ڈیفنس کالج کے تحت ہونے والی ورکشاپ کے شرکا سے گفتگو کرتے ہوئے سندھ کے گورنر ڈاکٹر عشرت علی آباد نے کہا ہے کہ قومی مالیاتی ایوارڈ کے سلسلے میں صوبوں کے درمیان مفاہمت اور ہم آہنگی سے پیش رفت ہوئی ہے. گورنر نے بتایا کہ کراچی میں پینے کے پانی کی فراہمی کے لیے متعدد منصوبوں پر کام جاری ہے. نیشنل ڈیفنس کالج کے کمانڈنٹ لیفٹیننٹ جنرل طارق وسیم غازی بھی اس موقع پر موجود تھے.
پشاور میں ایک اجلاس میں رواں مالی سال کے ترقیاتی منصوبوں کے بارے میں ہونے والی پیش رفت کا جائزہ لیا گیا. وزیر اعلیٰ جناب اکرم خان درانی نے صدارت کی. وزیر اعلیٰ نے کہا کہ ارکان اسمبلی کو تعمیر سرحد پروگرام کے تحت 50-50 لاکھ روپے کے ترقیاتی فنڈز دیے گئے ہیں. صوبے کے مختلف ضلعوں میں اساتذہ کی 4,500 اسامیاں پیدا کی گئی ہیں.
کراچی میں صنعتکاروں اور تاجروں کی ایک تقریب سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے خزانے اور اقتصادی امور کے وفاقی وزیر جناب شوکت عزیز نے کہا کہ ملک میں سائنسی ترقی کی رفتار میں نمایاں اضافہ ہوا ہے. آئندہ بجٹ میں نہ تو کوئی نیا ٹیکس لگایا جائے گا اور نہ ہی کسی ٹیکس کی شرح میں اضافہ ہوگا. مقررین نے کہا کہ حکومت نے ملکی معیشت کو مضبوط بنانے کے لیے جو اقدامات کیے ہیں اس کے مثبت نتائج برآمد ہونا شروع ہو گئے ہیں.
قصور میں لوگوں کے اجتماع سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے وزیر خارجہ خورشید محمود قصوری نے کہا ہے کہ دنیا کا کوئی ملک پاکستان کو اس کی مرضی کے خلاف کوئی پالیسی اختیار کرنے پر مجبور نہیں کر سکتا. انہوں نے کہا کہ پاکستان کو قوموں کی برادری میں ایک بلند مقام حاصل ہے. انہوں نے سارک کانفرنس کے اعلان کو تاریخی قرار دیا اور امید ظاہر کی کہ اس سے پاکستان اور بھارت کے درمیان پائیدار امن کی بنیاد رکھی جائے گی. وزیر خارجہ نے موضع تارا گڑھ میں مختلف ترقیاتی منصوبوں کا افتتاح کیا.
ملک بھر میں مقامی حکومتوں کے آئندہ انتخابات میں پرانے اور نادرا کے تیار کردہ شناختی کارڈ کے ذریعے ووٹ ڈالنے کی اجازت ہوگی. اسلام آباد میں الیکشن کمیشن کے ایک نوٹیفیکیشن میں کہا گیا ہے کہ مقامی حکومتوں کے انتخابات میں رائے دہندگان پرانا اور نیا دونوں شناختی کارڈ دکھا کر اپنا حق رائے دہی استعمال کر سکتے ہیں. بلوچستان میں خشک سالی کے خاتمے کے بعد پھلوں اور سبزیوں کے پیداوار پر اچھے اثرات مرتب ہوئے ہیں. کوئٹہ مرکز سے سلیم جاوید خان کی رپورٹ.
بلوچستان میں وسیع رقبے پر پھل اور سبزیاں کاشت کی جاتی ہیں. کوئٹہ کے علاوہ کلات، زیارت، مستونگ، لورالائی پھلوں اور سبزیوں کی پیداوار کے لحاظ سے بہت مشہور ہیں. سیب، انگور، انار، کھجور، چیری، بادام، آلو اور پیاز کا شمار بلوچستان میں پیدا ہونے والے اہم پھلوں اور سبزیوں میں ہوتا ہے. صوبہ بلوچستان تقریباً 6 سال خشک سالی کا شکار رہا، جس سے زرعی پیداوار خصوصاً پھلوں اور سبزیوں کی پیداوار بری طرح متاثر ہوئی. خشک سالی سے صوبے کے وسیع علاقے میں باغات اجڑ گئے اور زمینداروں کو بھاری نقصان اٹھانا پڑا۔ اس سال صوبے میں نہ صرف بارشیں ہوئیں بلکہ شدید برف باری بھی ہوئی، اور طویل خشک سالی کے خاتمے پر کاشتکاروں نے سکھ کا سانس لیا۔
اس سال موسم جو ہے نا باغوں کا اور پیداوار بھی زیادہ ہوئیں گے اور صحیح بھی رہے گا، جو ہمیں امید ہے، اور زمینداروں کو صحیح محاذہ جو ہے نا صحیح ملے گا انشاءاللہ۔ اس سال فصل بھی اچھی رہے گی اور پھل جو ٹیسٹی بھی ہوگی انشاءاللہ، امید ہے کہ اور بارشیں ہوئیں گی، اس سے واٹر لیول بھی اوپر آئے گی۔
بلوچستان میں سالانہ 14 لاکھ ٹن سے زیادہ پھل اور 11 لاکھ ٹن سے زیادہ سبزیاں پیدا ہوتی ہیں۔ 1986-87 سے لے کر اب تک پھلوں اور سبزیوں کی پیداوار میں 190% اضافہ ہوا ہے۔ خصوصاً سیب کی پیداوار 5 لاکھ ٹن تک پہنچ گئی ہے۔ جہاں تک کھجور کا تعلق ہے، ملک کی 70% کھجور کی پیداوار بلوچستان سے حاصل ہوتی ہے۔
حالیہ بارشوں اور برف باری سے خشک سالی میں کمی ہوئی ہے، امید ہے کہ اس سال پھلوں کی پیداوار میں اضافہ ہوگا اور زمیندار خوشحال ہوں گے۔ سلیم جاوید خان، پاکستان ٹیلی ویژن نیوز، کوئٹہ۔
چار صدر نے موضع اسٹیشن کورونا میں سوئی گیس کی فراہمی کا افتتاح کرتے ہوئے پانی اور بجلی کے وفاقی وزیر جناب آفتاب احمد خان شیرپاؤ نے کہا کہ ملک کے تمام علاقوں کو بجلی فراہم کرنے کے لیے ایک جامع حکمت عملی مرتب کر لی گئی ہے۔ صوبائی اسمبلی کے ارکان سکندر شیرپاؤ اور عالم زیب عمر زئی نے کہا کہ علاقے میں سوئی گیس کی فراہمی پر 50 لاکھ روپے خرچ ہوں گے اور 1000 گھروں کو سوئی گیس کی سہولت فراہم ہوگی۔
لاہور میں نیشنل یونیورسٹی آف کمپیوٹر اینڈ ایمرجنگ سائنسز میں خطاب کرتے ہوئے تعلیم کے وفاقی وزیر محترمہ زبیدہ جلال نے ملک میں سائنس اور ٹیکنالوجی کی تعلیم کے لیے ہر سطح پر بھرپور کوششیں کرنے پر زور دیا ہے۔ انہوں نے یونیورسٹی کی تحقیقی سرگرمیوں کو سراہا۔ یونیورسٹی کے چانسلر سینٹ میں قائد ایوان جناب وسیم سجاد نے اپنے خطاب میں کہا کہ اعلیٰ تعلیم کے نجی ادارے بہت اہم کردار ادا کر رہے ہیں۔ اس موقع پر طلباء کو اسناد اور گولڈ میڈلز دیے گئے۔
اسلام آباد میں کامسیٹس کوآرڈینیٹنگ کونسل کا 2 روزہ اجلاس شروع ہوا۔ افتتاحی اجلاس سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے سائنس اور ٹیکنالوجی کے انچارج وزیر ڈاکٹر عطاء الرحمان نے کہا کہ حکومت نے 4 سال میں سائنس اور ٹیکنالوجی کو ملک کی معاشی اور اقتصادی ترقی کے لیے استعمال کرنے کے لیے اہم اقدامات کیے ہیں۔ اجلاس میں چین، اردن، نائجیریا، تنزانیہ، ترکی اور پاکستان کے نمائندے شرکت کر رہے ہیں۔
کوٹلی میں سردار فتح محمد خان کریلوی کی یاد میں ایک تقریب سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے آزاد کشمیر کے وزیر اعظم سردار سکندر حیات خان نے کہا کہ بھارتی تسلط سے آزادی اور پاکستان کے ساتھ الحاق کے لیے کشمیری عوام کی جدوجہد ضرور کامیاب ہوگی۔ انہوں نے کہا کہ کشمیری عوام کو اقوام متحدہ کی قراردادوں کے مطابق ان کا حق خود ارادیت دیا جائے۔ مقررین نے کہا کہ کشمیری عوام کی بے مثال قربانیوں کی وجہ سے کشمیر کا مسئلہ بین الاقوامی سطح پر اجاگر ہو گیا ہے۔ انہوں نے کہا کہ جنوبی ایشیا میں قیام امن کے لیے مسئلہ کشمیر کا حل ضروری ہے۔
آرمی میڈیکل اینڈ ڈینٹل کور میں ڈاکٹروں کی بھرتی کے لیے ٹیسٹ کل ہو رہے ہیں۔ اس مقصد کے لیے امیدواروں کی رجسٹریشن کا عمل مکمل ہو گیا ہے۔ اسپیشلسٹ اور جنرل ڈیوٹی میڈیکل افسروں کی تعیناتی کے لیے پہلی دفعہ آن لائن ٹیسٹ کا طریقہ استعمال کیا جا رہا ہے۔ اس طریقہ کار کے تحت تمام امیدواروں کا ٹیسٹ بذریعہ کمپیوٹر لیا جائے گا اور ان کا ریزلٹ بھی کمپیوٹر ہی مرتب کرے گا۔ آن لائن ٹیسٹ کا مقصد تعیناتی کے عمل کو شفاف اور آسان بنانا ہے۔ آزاد کشمیر میں ٹائنگ کے مقام پر ایک عام جلسے سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے آزاد کشمیر کے صدر سردار محمد انور خان نے کہا کہ کشمیر کے مسئلے کے حل سے ہی خطے میں امن قائم ہو سکتا ہے اور مسئلہ کشمیر کو کسی صورت میں نظر انداز نہیں کیا جا سکتا۔ آزاد کشمیر کے منتخب نمائندوں نے بھی جلسہ عام سے خطاب کیا اور علاقے کی ترقی پر روشنی ڈالی۔
متحدہ قومی موومنٹ سے تعلق رکھنے والے وفاقی وزیر مواصلات سینیٹر احمد علی، صوبائی وزیر عبدالرؤف صدیقی اور صحت کے مشیر نعمان سہگل نجی مصروفیت کی بنا پر مستعفی ہو گئے ہیں۔ اس بات کا اعلان ایم کیو ایم رابطہ کمیٹی کے انچارج انور عالم نے کراچی میں جنرل ورکرز کے اجلاس میں کیا۔ انہوں نے بتایا کہ قومی اسمبلی کے رکن عزیز اللہ بروہی، ایس اے خان اور سید سرکار الدین قومی اسمبلی کی رکنیت چھوڑ رہے ہیں۔ انہوں نے کہا کہ ان تبدیلیوں کا مقصد عوامی فلاح کے کاموں کو زیادہ یقینی بنانا ہے۔ ایم کیو ایم کے قائد جناب الطاف حسین نے لندن سے ٹیلی فون کے ذریعے اپنے خطاب میں کہا کہ ان استعفوں سے کسی قسم کی غلط فہمی پیدا نہیں ہونی چاہیے۔ ان اقدامات کا مقصد نئے لوگوں کو ان کی صلاحیتوں کے اظہار کا موقع فراہم کرنا ہے۔ انہوں نے کہا کہ تمام عہدے عوام کی امانت ہوتے ہیں۔ انہوں نے کارکنوں کو ہدایت کی کہ وہ عوام کی فلاح و بہبود کے لیے پوری دیانتداری سے کام کریں۔ لاہور میں یوم حمید نظامی کے موقع پر تقریب سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے مقررین نے کہا کہ پاکستان کا ایٹمی پروگرام خالصتاً دفاعی مقاصد اور خطے میں توازن برقرار رکھنے کے لیے ہے. قاضی حسین احمد, راجہ ظفر الحق, جناب اعتزاز احسن, ڈاکٹر اسرار احمد, دی نیشن کے ایڈیٹر جناب عارف نظامی, ممتاز صحافی مجیب الرحمان شامی اور ڈاکٹر مغیث الدین شیخ اور دوسرے مقررین نے تقریب سے خطاب کیا. نوائے وقت اور دی نیشن کے چیف ایڈیٹر جناب مجید نظامی بھی تقریب میں موجود تھے. مقررین نے مرحوم حمید نظامی کی قومی خدمات کو خراج عقیدت پیش کرتے ہوئے کہا کہ انہوں نے اپنے قلم کے ذریعے نظریہ پاکستان, اسلامی اقدار اور جمہوریت کی بالادستی کے لیے جدوجہد کی. مقررین نے مختلف قومی ایشوز پر ملی اتحاد اور اتفاق کی ضرورت پر زور دیا. انہوں نے مسائل کے حل کے لیے اداروں کے استحکام اور آئین اور قانون کی بالادستی کی اہمیت اجاگر کی. سارک کانفرنس کے ادیبوں کی 10th کانفرنس لاہور میں ختم ہو گئی. کانفرنس میں سارک ممالک کے ممتاز ادیبوں نے شرکت کی. اختتامی اجلاس سے بھارت کی ممتاز افسانہ نگار اجیت کور, ڈاکٹر انور سجاد, مستثر حسین طارق اور شعیب ہاشمی نے بھی خطاب کیا. مقررین نے دنیا میں امن کی ضرورت پر زور دیا اور ہر قسم کے استحصال کی مخالفت کی. انہوں نے کہا کہ مشرق وسطی اور ایشیا کے رہنے والے ہزار سال پرانی تہذیبوں کے عظیم وارث ہیں اور وہ امن کے علم بردار ہیں. انہوں نے کہا کہ اس خطے کے ادیب دنیا میں امن قائم کرنے کے لیے مسلسل کوششیں کرتے رہیں گے کیونکہ دنیا کی بھلائی امن میں مضمر ہے. پاک آرمی نے ضلع جوب کے علاقے سمبازا میں طبی کیمپ لگایا جہاں علاج کی مفت سہولتیں فراہم کی گئیں. سمبازا اور قطب جوار سے آئے ہوئے تقریباً 500 افراد کو کیمپ میں علاج کی سہولتیں فراہم کی گئیں. 180 مریضوں کے آپریشن بھی کیے گئے. فری میڈیکل کیمپ سے استفادہ کرنے والوں میں خواتین اور بچوں کی بڑی تعداد بھی شامل تھی. جشن بہاراں کے سلسلے میں اسلام آباد میں میلے کا اہتمام کیا گیا ہے. تفصیلات کے لیے فرحانہ خان.
قدرت نے پاکستان کو 4 موسموں سے نوازا ہے. ان موسموں میں بہار کو ممتاز حیثیت حاصل ہے. بہار کی آمد کے ساتھ جہاں پھول کھلتے ہیں وہیں لمحات سے لطف اندوز ہونے کے لیے ثقافتی سرگرمیاں بھی شروع ہو جاتی ہیں. وفاقی دارالحکومت, جسے عام طور پر سیاسی سرگرمیوں کا محور سمجھا جاتا ہے, بہار کی آمد کے ساتھ ہی یہاں بھی جشن بہارا کا باقاعدہ اہتمام کیا جاتا ہے. اسی سلسلے میں پاک بحریہ کی جانب سے نیول ہیڈ کوارٹر اسلام آباد میں ایک میلے کا اہتمام ہوا. اس میلے میں لوگوں کی ایک بڑی تعداد نے شرکت کی.
کیسے لگا آپ کو میلہ؟
میلہ بہت اچھا ہے, یہ چیزیں پروموٹ ہونی چاہیے. اس سے ایک تو سب کو ایک اچھا انٹرٹینمنٹ اپرچونیٹی مل جاتی ہے.
یہاں پہ تو اسکول جاتا ہے, ٹائم ہی نہیں ہوتا ہے انجوائے کرنے کے, میلہ اس میں انجوائے کر سکتے ہیں.
میلے میں بچوں کی خوشی دیکھنے سے تعلق رکھتی ہے. انہوں نے شرکا کو پرجوش انداز میں خوش آمدید کہا اور چاروں صبحوں کے روایتی رقص پیش کیے. ملک کے مختلف حصوں کی ثقافت کو اجاگر کرنے کے لیے آرٹ اینڈ کرافٹ نمائش کا بھی اہتمام کیا گیا. فوڈ فیسٹیول میں پاکستان کے مختلف حصوں کے روایتی کھانوں کے سٹال بھی لگائے گئے. اس میلے کی خاص بات یہ ہے کہ اس سے حاصل ہونے والی آمدنی سے خصوصی بچوں کے لیے ایک سکول قائم کیا جائے گا.
پچھلے سال بھی ہم نے میلہ کیا تھا جس کے اندر ہم نے کافی ڈونیشن کلیکٹ کیا تھا, مگر ہم نے کافی مطلب بہت بڑا, چونکہ انٹرنیشنل لیول پہ ہم سکول بنا رہے تو اس کے واسطے کافی فنڈز چاہیے.
اس موقع پر خصوصی بچوں کو تحائف بھی دیے گئے.
جشن بہارا کے سلسلے میں منعقد کیے جانے والے میلے اور تقریبات ثقافتی سرگرمیوں کے فروغ میں اہم کردار ادا کرتے ہیں. فرحانہ خان, پاکستان ٹیلی ویژن نیوز, اسلام آباد.
شالیمار ٹیلی ویژن نیٹ ورک نے اپنے نیٹ ورک میں توسیع کرنے کا فیصلہ کیا ہے. اس سلسلے میں 8 نئے ٹرانسمیٹرز نصب کیے جا رہے ہیں, جبکہ موجودہ 12 ٹرانسمیٹرز کو تبدیل کر کے نئے ٹرانسمیٹرز لگائے جائیں گے. اس منصوبے پر 6 کروڑ روپے لاگت آئے گی اور یہ منصوبہ اگلے مہینے کے آخر تک مکمل ہو جائے گا. ذرائع کے مطابق نئے ٹرانسمیٹرز کی تنصیب کے بعد STN چینل 3 کی نشریات ملک کے 70% آبادی دیکھ سکے گی. نئے ٹرانسمیٹرز ساہیوال, بٹخیلا, مینگورا, ٹھنڈیانی, ٹڈو الائیار, سبی, قلات اور خستار میں لگائے جائیں گے, جبکہ اس وقت کراچی, حیدرآباد, سکھر, لاڑکانہ, کوئٹہ, بھاولپور, لاہور, ملتان, فیصل آباد, ڈسکا, اسلام آباد اور پشاور میں ٹرانسمیٹرز قائم ہیں.
پاکستان اور بھارت کے درمیان 5 ایک روزہ میچوں کی سیریز کا دوسرا میچ منگل کو راولپنڈی میں کھیلا جائے گا۔ پنڈی کرکٹ گراؤنڈ میں دونوں ٹیموں کے کھلاڑیوں نے نیٹ پریکٹس کی۔ بھارت کے صرف 4 کھلاڑیوں نے پریکٹس میں حصہ لیا، ان میں وی وی ایکس لکشمن، عرفان پٹھان، پرتھیو پٹیل اور رمیش پوار شامل تھے۔ بھارت کے فاسٹ بالر عرفان پٹھان کی پاکستان ٹیلی ویژن کے نمائندے شمس پرویز سے خصوصی بات چیت۔
کافی اچھا کرکٹ کا ماحول ہے، لاسٹ ٹائم بھی آیا تھا تو مطلب کافی اچھا کرکٹ، مطلب لیول بھی کافی اچھا تھا 19 کا، وہاں پہ پرفارم کیا تھا تو اچھا لگ رہا تھا۔ اور ابھی یہاں پہ بڑی ٹیم کے ساتھ اوبیسلی مطلب انڈیا کے لیے کھیلنا بہت بڑی بات ہوتی ہے، اور انڈیا کے لیے کھیل کے پاکستان آ رہے ہیں یہاں کھیلنے کے لیے تو بہت اچھا لگ رہا ہے۔ پوری کوشش کریں گے اچھا پرفارمنس کرنے کی، محنت کرنا ہمارا کام ہے، باقی اللہ کا کام ہے دینا۔ میں تو ابھی اتنا بڑا کرکٹ نہیں ہوں کہ یہ سب باتیں کر سکتی، بس ابھی پہلے مجھے اپنا کرکٹ کھیلنا۔
پاکستان کرکٹ ٹیم کے تمام کھلاڑیوں نے نیٹ پریکٹس کی۔ کوچ جاوید میاداد نے بالرز کو فاضل رنز نہ دینے سے متعلق خصوصی ہدایات دی۔ پاکستان کرکٹ ٹیم کے ڈاکٹر کے مطابق تمام کھلاڑی جسمانی طور پر فٹ ہیں۔ پاکستان اور بھارت کے درمیان کرکٹ سیریز کی کوریج کے لیے پاکستان آئے ہوئے بھارتی صحافیوں نے پاکستان ٹیلی ویژن کو خصوصی انٹرویو میں کہا ہے کہ پاکستان اور بھارت کے درمیان کرکٹ کے روابط کی بحالی سے دونوں ملکوں کے عوام کے رویوں میں مثبت تبدیلی آئی ہے۔
کل کرکٹ میچ ہوا کراچی میں، ایک بہت اچھا میچ ہوا، دونوں ٹیموں میں جس نے بھی اچھا پرفارمنس کیا اس کو کراؤڈ نے سپورٹ کیا، چیئر کیا۔ کھیل کے ذریعے ضرور چیزیں پاس آ سکتی ہیں۔
یہاں میزبانی کا جو عالم ہے وہ ہم نے کبھی سپنے میں بھی نہیں سوچا تھا، اور جو بھی دوستی ہے، جو بھی پیار ہے، اس کے لیے ایک جو ایٹماسفیئر کریٹ کیا گیا ہے یہ شاید ہسٹورک ہے، اسے ہمیشہ یاد کیا جائے گا۔
وہی آنے کے بعد جیسا لوگوں نے اس کو، جیسے لوگوں نے دیکھا، جیسے لوگوں نے بات کیا، میں ابھی تو سوچ رہا ہوں کہ کرکٹ از اے ویری پاورفل ٹول، اور یہ ول گو اے لانگ وے، اور بہت اچھا یہ دونوں کنٹری کو پاس لائے ہیں۔
پاکستان اولمپک ایسوسی ایشن کے 9 منتخب صدر اور 9 سیف گیمز کی آرگنائزنگ کمیٹی کے چیئرمین لیفٹیننٹ جنرل سید عارف حسن نے کہا ہے کہ ملک میں کھیلوں کی ترقی کے لیے کھیلوں کی تمام فیڈریشنوں کے ساتھ مل جل کر کام کیا جائے گا۔
تمام فیڈریشن سے میں بات چیت کروں گا، ہر فیڈریشن کی اپنی پیکیولیئر ریکوائرمنٹ ہے، اور وہ پہلے سمجھ کے اور پھر اس کے بعد ایک پلان بنائیں گے۔ بٹ بیسک جو میرا ہے پروگرام وہ ہے یوتھ کے اوپر زور دینا، سیکنڈلی اسپانسرشپ، مینجمنٹ کے اوپر تھوڑا، اور یہ میں بس بتانا چاہتا ہوں کہ میں تمام سب مل کے ایز اے ٹیم وی ول ورک۔ کی فیڈریشنز کو بھی پرابلم ہے پیسوں کا، فائنینسز، بیسکلی اسپانسرشپ بہت تھوڑی ہے، تو اس میں ان کو ہم ہیلپ کریں گے۔ جہاں تک اسپورٹس پالیسی کا تعلق ہے، وہ پہلے بھی میں نے اناؤنس کیا تھا کہ کیونکہ گورنمنٹ کی نے اناؤنس کی ہوئی ہے ایک اسپورٹس پالیسی، وہ امپلیمنٹ تو ہوئے گی، مگر اس میں کچھ اگر کسی کے اعتراضات ہیں تو بات چیت کی جائے گی، دیکھیں گے کہ اگر کوئی اس میں کوئی حل ہے تو ٹھیک ہے۔
لیفٹیننٹ جنرل سید عارف حسن نے بتایا کہ بھارت کی پولو ٹیم 23 مارچ سے سیف پولو چیلنج کپ میں شرکت کے لیے پاکستان آئے گی۔
نے ڈیسائیڈ کیا کہ 3 میچز ادھر ہوں گے اور 3 میچز نیو دہلی میں ہوں گے، تو پہلا جو سیٹ آف میچز ہیں وہ یہاں پہ ہوں گے 23, 26 اور 27، تو انشاءاللہ یہ اسی گراؤنڈ پہ یہیں پہ کروائیں گے۔
پنجاب اسٹیڈیم لاہور میں پہلے بین الصوبائی کھیلوں کے افتتاح کے موقع پر تقریب سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے پنجاب کے وزیر اعلیٰ چوہدری پرویز الہی نے کہا کہ صوبے میں نچلی سطح سے کھیلوں کو فروغ دینے کے لیے جامع منصوبہ بندی کی جا رہی ہے، اس ضمن میں ہر سال 20 نومبر کو اسپورٹس ڈے منایا جائے گا۔ وزیر اعلیٰ کپ کے نام سے مقابلوں کا انعقاد بھی ہوگا، جس کے فاتح کو 50 لاکھ، رنر اپ 25 لاکھ، جبکہ تیسرے نمبر پر آنے والے کھلاڑی کو 10 لاکھ روپے انعام دیا جائے گا۔ وزیر اعلیٰ نے کہا کہ لاہور میں انڈر پاس کی طرح نیشنل پارک میں انڈور جمنیزیم اور سوئمنگ پول کے منصوبے بھی ہنگامی بنیادوں پر مکمل کیے جائیں گے۔ اس موقع پر صوبائی وزیر کھیل نعیم اللہ شاہانی اور پنجاب اولمپک ایسوسی ایشن کے صدر نے اپنے خطاب میں کھیلوں کی سرپرستی کرنے پر وزیر اعلیٰ کو خراج تحسین پیش کیا۔ ڈیرہ اسماعیل خان کا سالانہ میلہ اسپا مویشیاں ختم ہو گیا۔ صوبہ سرحد کے گورنر سید افتخار حسین شاہ اس موقع پر مہمان خصوصی تھے۔ میلے میں نیزہ بازی اور گھڑ دوڑ کے مقابلے ہوئے۔ لوگوں نے گھوڑوں کے رقص اور دوسرے ایونٹس میں گہری دلچسپی کا اظہار کیا۔ ایران کی فزیکل ایجوکیشن کے ڈیپٹی چیف ڈاکٹر زید احمد پوری کی قیادت میں وفد نے اسلام آباد میں ثقافت اور کھیلوں کے وزیر مملکت رئیس منیر احمد سے ملاقات کی۔ وزیر مملکت نے کہا کہ پاکستان اور ایران کے درمیان صدیوں پرانے ثقافتی تعلقات ہیں۔ انہوں نے کہا کہ پاکستان میں خواتین مختلف کھیلوں کے شعبوں میں بھرپور شرکت کر رہی ہیں۔ ایرانی وفد کی لیڈر نے بتایا کہ ایرانی حکومت نے خواتین کو کھیلوں میں حصہ لینے کی اجازت دے دی ہے اور وہ مختلف کھیلوں میں بھرپور حصہ لے رہی ہیں۔ پاک بھارت کرکٹ سیریز اور دونوں ملکوں کے درمیان تعلقات کے موضوع پر اسلام آباد میں ایک سیمینار منعقد ہوا. سیمینار سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے مقررین نے کہا کہ یہ سیریز 15 سال کے وقفے کے بعد کھیلی جا رہی ہے، جسے نہ صرف کرکٹ کے کھیل کو فائدہ ہوگا بلکہ دونوں ملکوں کے عوام بھی ایک دوسرے کے قریب آئیں گے. انہوں نے کہا کہ پاکستان اور بھارت کے درمیان تمام شعبوں میں تعاون کی فضا کو برقرار رہنا چاہیے تاکہ علاقے میں امن اور استحکام آئے. مقررین نے کہا کہ موجودہ کرکٹ سیریز کو کامیاب بنانے کے لیے تمام طبقوں کو مل کر کام کرنا ہوگا. سیمینار کا اہتمام کرکٹ پروموٹرز کلب راولپنڈی نے کیا تھا.
ناظرین، صوبہ سندھ کے اکثر علاقوں میں ان دنوں شدید گرمی پڑ رہی ہے. آج سب سے زیادہ درجہ حرارت چھور میں 41 جبکہ حیدرآباد، نواب شاہ اور بدین میں 40 ڈگری سینٹی گریڈ ریکارڈ کیا گیا. آج اسلام آباد میں پولن کی مقدار 30,000 فی کیوبک میٹر تک پہنچ گئی ہے. موسم کی تازہ صورتحال کچھ اس طرح سے ہے کہ افغانستان، ایران اور ملکہ علاقوں پر گہرے بادل دکھائی دے رہے ہیں، لیکن فی الحال یہ بادل پاکستان تک نہیں پہنچ رہے کیونکہ پاکستان پر ہوا کا دباؤ معمول سے زیادہ ہے. اس لیے آئندہ 24 گھنٹوں کے دوران ملک کے بیشتر علاقوں میں موسم خشک اور گرم رہے گا اور صبح سرحد کے پہاڑی علاقوں میں چند ایک مقامات پر تیز ہواؤں کے ساتھ ہلکی بارش کا امکان ہے. آخر میں دیکھتے ہیں آج کے درجۂ حرارت. اسلام آباد میں زیادہ سے زیادہ 31 ڈگری سینٹی گریڈ، لاہور 33، کراچی 36، پشاور 30، کوئٹہ 29، مظفرآباد 32 اور سری نگر میں زیادہ سے زیادہ 24 ڈگری سینٹی گریڈ ریکارڈ کیا گیا.
موسم کی تازہ ترین صورتحال آپ نے ملاحظہ کی. اس کے ساتھ ہی آج کا خبر نامہ ختم ہوتا ہے.
اپنی نیوز ٹیم کے ہمراہ آپ سے اجازت چاہیں گے. اللہ حافظ اور شب بخیر.
رحمت اللہ علیہ نے فرمایا، ہر مسلمان کو ایمانداری، خلوص دل اور بے غرضی سے پاکستان کی خدمت کرنی چاہیے. ٹی وی نیٹ ورک دیکھ رہے ہیں.
لیڈیز اینڈ جینٹلمین، آئی ہیو امینس پلیزر ان ویلکمنگ ہز ایکسلنسی دا پریزیڈنٹ آف پاکستان جنرل پرویز مشرف to the third India Today conclave. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of Pakistan. Thank you. Good evening, sir. You've got an audience here which is in a very good mood after the cricket match.
We are also in a good mood.
Excellent. That's in the spirit of the game.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are indeed privileged to have with us as the keynote speaker for the evening President Musharraf, live via satellite from Islamabad. As we sit here tonight, we're also privileged to have ringside seats to history in the making. Earlier today, we witnessed the first cricket match between India and Pakistan on Pakistani soil in 15 years. Our cricketers are there, as Prime Minister Bajpai told the team before they left, not only to win matches, but also to win hearts. Nothing could be more symbolic of the new relationship between our two countries than the fact that barely 2 years ago, we almost went to war. If cricket matches were the only point of conflict between the two countries, it would be a change that all of us would welcome, even if we were to lose. Tonight's speaker, President Musharraf, shares the credit, along with Prime Minister Bajpai, for taking the two neighbors to the brink of peace rather than war. He has achieved this against overwhelming odds. I'm not guilty of exaggeration when I say that he has possibly the world's toughest job. At a time when terror is no longer local, as the president of a frontier state in the war against terror, history has given him a central role in the post-9/11 world. He has faced two assassination attempts in recent months and is the prime target of religious extremists, terrorist groups, the Taliban, and political parties opposed to Pakistan's close relationship with the U.S. He has displayed rare courage in taking on his opponents while mending fences with India. It is based on an unshaken belief that Pakistan's future can only be ensured by economic development and peace on the subcontinent. It is perhaps his commando background that has held him in such good stead. It has helped him negotiate through the minefield of politics and international affairs with amazing nimble-footedness and fearlessness. That he has the gift of communication is without dispute, and I'm sure you'll see witness to that this evening. At the World Economic Forum in Davos recently, I personally saw how he handled with great candor and aplomb some of the most difficult questions, including the ones relating to selling of nuclear secrets by a Pakistani scientist. He was widely acknowledged as the star of this year's meet. He never shies away from tricky issues, and like a true army general, is willing to give as good as he gets. In recent times, General Musharraf has been blamed for plunging relations with India to an all-time low. Memories of Kargil and the continuing terrorist strikes in India are not easily forgotten. But in recent months, there is suddenly a hope of a new dawn. President Musharraf and Prime Minister Bajpai have embarked on the difficult process of wiping out more than half a century of hatred and hostility. They cannot afford to be trapped in history. Here they have a chance to make history. That is why in the India Today cover story after the SAARC summit, we described the two leaders on our cover simply as bravehearts. And I believe this is most apt, as what they are doing requires enormous courage. And as we all know, the world belongs to the brave. The two leaders are now in the process of charting out a different tomorrow, where it would be possible for Indians and Pakistanis to travel without a humiliating stamp in their visas, requiring to report at the nearest police station, where we can talk of cross-border trade rather than cross-border terrorism, where the only time we would ever gear up for battle would be when our cricket teams pad up to face each other. There has never been such a critical crossroad in relations between the two countries as now. The prosperity of the entire South Asian region lies in the hands of India and Pakistan. The case for peace has never been more compelling. And no one is better qualified to speak about the dividends of peace and the future of this region than our distinguished speaker, His Excellency General Pervez Musharraf, the President of Pakistan. I now invite His Excellency to deliver his keynote address, after which we'll be followed by a question and answer session. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of Pakistan.
Thank you again, everyone. Thank you very much, Mr. Arun Puri, the Editor-in-Chief of India Today. All the ladies and gentlemen, good evening and assalamu alaikum. It is indeed my very special privilege to be addressing India Today Conclave via satellite. I only wish I was sitting in front of you and seeing you in person. I thank the organizers and the management of India Today for this invitation and for affording me this very unique opportunity of speaking to all of you. First of all, let me congratulate all of you. Let me congratulate India for the first victory after 15 years in the first one-day international at Karachi. I am very glad indeed that the match was most interesting, most well contested, and extremely exciting. I am also glad that the people of Pakistan in general and the people of Karachi in particular welcomed the Indian team with a very open and a warm heart. I only hope that the series in the future, the other one-day internationals and the test matches are played in the same good, welcoming spirit that we saw today. So I again congratulate all of you for winning today a very exciting and thrilling match. Coming to the subject, ladies and gentlemen, the theme of this year's conclave is India Tomorrow, Building a South Asia Century. I have been tasked to speak on the future of Pakistan-India relations, the opportunities, risks, benefits, my expectations from the Indian leadership, possible United States role, and my own world vision. I commend the organizers, first of all, for selecting such an apt subject bearing immense relevance to the region, particularly at this time. I wish this conclave success in the deliberations and pray for a prosperous South Asia through bridging mutual differences. Ladies and gentlemen, quite clearly, as the theme and its elaboration imply, realization of a South Asia century requires collective will and application. India cannot go it alone. The hurdle in the application of this collective will indeed comes from continued Indo-Pakistan confrontation. Before getting involved in regional emancipation and bilateral conflict identification and resolution, I would like to share my overall global vision as I am required to do. Ladies and gentlemen, the 21st century is a century of globalization. The outlines of a global village are visible in all fields. It is a century of geoeconomics and of interdependence. While on one hand, we witness the start of integration of the world for the sake of human uplift, on the other hand, there is manifestation of enhanced destructive power of implements of confrontation. I am referring to weapons of mass destruction or even the increased lethality of conventional weapons, rendering war an extremely dangerous and a very costly undertaking. Within these opposing realities, we also see the world fragmented, torn in conflict. Short of war, low-intensity conflict has seen the introduction of suicide bombing phenomenon, which provides a new and a very lethal weapon in the hands of a terrorist or a freedom fighter, whichever side of the divide you look from. Compensating for military and political weakness. Looking at each conflict in the last two decades, unfortunately, they all involve Muslim countries, all of whom happen to be at the receiving end. Muslims today suffer from a sense of deprivation, a sense of hopelessness, and a sense of powerlessness. Combined with poverty and illiteracy, this becomes an explosive mix, vulnerable to adoption of an extremist or a militant path. Thus, the world as a whole has become a dangerous place to live in. Improvement can only come through addressing Muslim concerns with justice. Within these outlined parameters, we need to look at the power equation in our region. War or military confrontation do not constitute a viable solution anymore. We must understand that the issue is not a game of numbers alone. The strategy of military coercion with numbers is inapplicable when an adversary, albeit weaker, is prepared to accept losses and inflict maximum retaliatory damage, which may be untenable to the other side. The question that arises is how to deal with this conflict-torn, hatred-infested world and meet our collective duty to bring peace to this world, our common heritage. I have proposed the strategy of enlightened moderation. This is a two-pronged strategy. One prong is to be exercised by the Muslims through rejection of extremism and militancy and opting for socio-economic development using a restructured OIC as the driving force. The other prong of this strategy of enlightened moderation is to be implemented by the West. Resolve all political disputes involving Muslims with justice. Success of this strategy, the overall strategy, indeed lies in the simultaneous success of both the prongs. After this brief look at the world, let us come closer home to our region, South Asia. We see an upheaval, turmoil in Afghanistan and Kashmir. If we can resolve these two issues, we will strike at the root of extremism and militancy, I am very sure. Pakistan is actively fighting against Al-Qaeda along our western borders in the tribal areas. We have the will and the capability to eradicate all foreigners from our country. We will not allow Al-Qaeda to maintain sanctuaries in Pakistan and operate outside Pakistan. Ladies and gentlemen, the Kashmir issue lies at the heart of Indo-Pakistan confrontation and hence is also the source of disunity of South Asia as a whole. As a result, SAARC has merely existed on the periphery of impotence. We saw a visible and a very pleasant change in the last SAARC summit held at Islamabad. This was momentous, not only for the thaw in Indo-Pakistan relations, but also for signing of SAFTA, which is a big leap towards free trade within our region. It is said, the past belonged to Europe, the present to America, and the future to Asia. Within Asia, we see Northeast Asia, East Asia, China, and Southeast Asia cooperating fully for mutual economic progress. South Asia and Central Asia sadly remain out of this prosperity loop, may I say. Quite clearly, common wisdom dictates intra-regional cooperation within SAARC and also ECO, the Economic Cooperation Organization, first, followed by inter-regional integration with the rest of Asia for joint benefits to our region. Pakistan's geography provides the critical linkage between the three regions of South Asia, Central Asia, and West Asia. Indo-Pakistan rapprochement unleashes the entire economic, commercial, trade potential of this whole region. Undoubtedly, the whole scenario provides a strong case for resolving disputes, ushering an era of peace by joining hands for socio-economic development of our people and of our region. India and Pakistan must bury the past and chart a new roadmap for peace. I believe people of both our countries desire peace, and may I also add, are fed up of confrontation. This is evident from the welcoming response to the CBMs of the past 1 or 2 months. Revival of sports ties with the tour of the Indian cricket team. Finally, they say it's better late than never. And the forthcoming SAF games indeed augur well for the promotion of people-to-people contacts. And we are witnessing this good contact during the one-day international today at Karachi. Ladies and gentlemen, Pakistan and India have lost half a century in mutual squabbles. Let us face it. We have fought wars, tested nuclear weapons, and have remained engaged in very hot confrontation throughout. Today, South Asia is nuclearized. It is brimming with lethal weaponry. Huge acquisitions of arsenal and sophisticated weapon technology make our region one of the most dangerous flashpoints in the world, and it is of greatest concern to the world. South Asia also constitutes one of the most impoverished regions of the world. Social indices are appalling. Millions live in dire poverty, misery, and disease. At the center of this dismal scenario is the spiraling vortex of Pakistan-India animosity. Kashmir, they say a paradise on earth, is the core issue that has bedeviled our relations throughout this half a century. Kashmir is the central issue that awaits a just and durable settlement. If Pakistan and India could settle Kashmir in accordance with aspirations of the Kashmiris, a new chapter in our troubled history will begin. This is very much possible if all parties are sincere in their quest for a just and durable peace through a solution acceptable to all of us, not to one single country. I have proposed a 4-point process whereby talks commence, centrality of Kashmir dispute is accepted, all solutions not acceptable to either of the three parties are taken off the table, and the remaining options, the one deemed most feasible and acceptable is chosen. I believe nothing could be fairer than this. A solution will emerge if all sides are mindful of the problem, if all parties, especially Kashmiris, are given the opportunity to have their due say and are associated with a credible, sincere, and serious quest for a final settlement between Pakistan and India. I do not want to speak about history. The political and legal history of Kashmir is well recorded and well documented in the archives and resolutions of the United Nations. All that I urge is, let us be pragmatic. Let us learn to accept hard facts. The issue of Kashmir is at the center stage. We cannot deny it. It must be resolved in an equitable and honorable manner, acceptable to India, Pakistan, and Kashmir. And I repeat, to India, acceptable to India, Pakistan, and the Kashmiris. We are not talking of a solution acceptable to Pakistan alone. I wish to assure you that we are determined to take two steps forward. If India takes one step and chooses to embark on a realistic quest for a just and durable peace with Pakistan on the basis of sovereign equality, India will find Pakistan sincere and responsive if it desires genuine improvement in relations. We are mindful of the difficulties posed by very rigid mindsets in the past. We must persevere. But if there is no movement towards a solution, I am afraid everything will slide back to square one. Let us look at the very broad benefits from peace accruing to both our countries. Maybe this serves as a motivation towards normalization. On trade, our market size will expand to 1.2 billion, equal to China, opening vistas of trading opportunities within the region. The foreign direct investment, which presently stagnates at $3 billion, could increase manifold. China attracts $40 billion. Access to alternate energy, natural gas from Iran and Central Asia, can become available to the region, bringing down energy costs by at least 50%. And may I say, India may be the maximum beneficiary. Tourism can flourish. The region has a vast treasure of tourist attractions, not only for the domestic, but also for the international tourists. Combined regional tours could benefit us all. Reduction in defense expenditure could take place. This will lead to availability of funds for social sectors and poverty reduction. And lastly, sports activities could be enhanced. Through mutual sports, India and Pakistan could regain their lost glory, at least in cricket and hockey. We must beware, however, ladies and gentlemen, there are extremists on both sides who try to derail the peace process. We must not be deterred from our path and be prepared to deal with them with an iron hand. In fact, in our own supreme interests, we must negotiate peace boldly, as if there are no detracting extremists. And we must also deal with all extremists boldly and firmly, as if there is no peace initiative going on. The joint statement, ladies and gentlemen, reached at Islamabad between me and Prime Minister Vajpayee provides a good framework for a relationship of harmony and mutual respect. The CBMs already initiated have generated tremendous goodwill. The foreign secretary level talks have further inched dialogue process forward. The composite dialogue scheduled for May and June this year should augur well for our future relationship. In this garden path that is very visible, I would be remiss if I did not strike some words of caution. Firstly, there is a simultaneity, a linkage between CBMs, the confidence building measures, and the composite dialogue. CBMs cannot outstrip dialogue process on all substantive issues, including Kashmir. Secondly, Kashmir dispute can never be sidelined or ignored. No leader in Pakistan can do that. We must move forward towards its resolution in tandem with the CBMs. And lastly, while talking of Kashmir, sooner or later, Kashmiris must join the peace process to make the solution practicable. Ladies and gentlemen, progress on dialogue towards serious resolution of disputes should set us thinking on other more substantive confidence-building measures. Why can't our defense expenditure be cut down? It certainly can. Pakistan is not in an arms race. We maintain a quantified force level based on a perceived threat and a strategy of minimum deterrence. With the enhancement of firepower of weapons, which I spoke of earlier, firepower of conventional weapons, we are already reducing our strength, the strength of our army by 50,000, may I inform you today. We had kept our defense budget frozen for the last 4 years, knowing fully well that our deterrence strategy is in place. India has to review its own strategy, because your defense force levels, may I say, are not based on threat, but on your own power projection. The latest multi-billion dollar acquisitions and your vastly enhanced budgetary allocations to defense take you in that direction of power projection. In any case, Pakistan will remain amenable for mutual proportional reduction of forces. Ladies and gentlemen, I honestly feel that the present time is ideal for resolution of all disputes and ushering in an era of peace, harmony and prosperity. The people of our country want it. The influential business community is eagerly looking forward to it in both the countries. I've interacted with many business leaders of your country. The media also seems to favor it. Where lies the stumbling block then? I'm afraid it lies with the leadership alone. Leaders on both sides have to be sincere to develop confidence and trust in each other. They have to be flexible enough to reach mutually acceptable solutions to previously intractable disputes, and they ought to be bold enough to bulldoze all opposition and risks en route to peace. We have to show enough maturity to be able to resolve disputes bilaterally within a reasonable timeline. It is only our failure which then invites third-party mediation or facilitation or involvement or encouragement. You can choose the word yourself, because I know there is some kind of an analogy to the word, to the term mediation, probably in your country. The US, being the sole superpower in a unipolar world, has a responsibility for bringing a just peace in the world on all disputes for our future generations. Their involvement towards resolution of the thorny Kashmir dispute will be of value only if we get stuck ourselves. So if we make bilateral progress, there is no need of outside interference or involvement. As responsible nuclear weapon states, we must demonstrate to the world that we have the courage and the conviction to settle our problems in a civilized manner. We must demonstrate the courage and wisdom to write a new chapter of peaceful coexistence and mutually beneficial cooperation. I find distinct warmth in the sentiments in Pakistan and India to engage constructively with each other. May I add that the people of both countries and the media can certainly play a very important role in improving the environment, paving the way for the settlement of all disputes, including the Kashmir dispute. Respect for basic principles of interstate conduct, developing relations based on sovereign equality, are the safe and sure foundations within which Pakistan-India relations can thrive and prosper. Ladies and gentlemen, we in Pakistan look forward to sustaining the present positive momentum in our relations with India. This is a moment of hope and a moment of optimism. Let us nurture it carefully and make the process of engagement irreversible. Let us draw a balance between the vast opportunities that exist for mutual gain and the hazards of falling back to self-generated hatred, despair, and confrontation. Pakistan and India must lead South Asia to new horizons of economic development, and the other South Asian countries certainly look forward to that. The roadmap delineated for the composite talks must be filled with other pointers and timelines for joint endeavors to resolve differences and disputes. It should not take long to fashion together a roadmap to progress and prosperity, reinforcing and utilizing the talent and the genius of our peoples, using our resources optimally. I wish the India Today Conclave every success. I would indeed be very happy to answer or to take any questions from your side. I thank you all, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, President Musharraf, for a very incisive and, as you would expect from a general, down to the brass tacks speech. It dealt with every issue, but I was very happy to note that you had talked about it's a time for hope and optimism. So, as the moderator, I will take the prerogative of asking the first question. You mentioned in your speech several times, sir, quite repeatedly, the fact that Kashmir was a central issue, that it was the issue which had to be resolved with justice. My understanding was that one of the reasons why the Agra summit failed was because India refused to recognize Kashmir as a core issue. Yet at the SAARC statement this January, Kashmir was placed among a list of 8 issues to be resolved bilaterally between India and Pakistan. So is there a difference now in terms of what was there in Agra and what is there now? Perhaps you'd like to elaborate on that.
I would like to answer this question. It's very pertinent. Is there somebody speaking? Sorry.
Sir, you go ahead.
Okay. I said I would like to certainly answer this this question. There is not much of a difference between what happened at Agra and what happened now in the joint statement. At Agra, we exactly accepted the centrality of Kashmir and the requirement of resolution of the Kashmir dispute if we were to improve relations between India and Pakistan. Let me say that the joint declaration, the Agra declaration, was prepared in draft. It was prepared by me, myself, Prime Minister Vajpayee, Foreign Minister Jaswant Singh, and my Foreign Minister. We drafted each and every word of it. And I have a copy of the draft here with me, in the Foreign Office, not with me now, at the moment. It was only after when I went back and I was to come back to a signing ceremony, which was the hall was ready for the signing ceremony, that after an hour or two, I was told by my foreign minister, no, we are not going to have the signing ceremony because they have rejected this declaration. And then we even went forward drafted another, redid the draft resolution. It took us some hours doing that, and it took a change in our in my schedule. We again accepted a fresh declaration. And unfortunately, an hour or two later, that declaration was also rejected. And the reason given to me at that time was that the Cabinet of India has rejected this. So that declaration, the draft of which is available in Pakistan, accepted the centrality of Kashmir. Now let's come to this new joint statement. There are three areas here which were almost in similar to the Agra Declaration, that the centrality of Kashmir is accepted, that a dialogue process on all issues, including Kashmir, has to be undertaken. But one very important element is also there, and that is that Pakistan has been accepted now as a party concerned with the dispute, as one of the parties in the dispute. This was never done in before. So therefore, I see that there is a certain progress on the resolution of all disputes.
So what you're basically saying, that you have kept the same position, but India has changed its position. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Agra was...
that's news to a lot of us.
The draft declaration, which never came to be shared, and if you want, I can get this published any time. I can give the draft to you also. Is similar to what we did now in the joint statement.
Let me give others
the very fact that Kashmir has been accepted as a dispute which needs to be resolved, and that Pakistan is a party to this dispute, was never accepted in the past.
Please, one minute. I'd like to now call on General Malik, former Chief of Staff, to ask a question.
Thank you, Anpuri. Good evening, General Musharraf. Firstly, I must say I'm delighted to speak to you over the this satellite conference. I'd like to extend my warm greetings to you and good wishes to you. I must also compliment you for the speech that you made. I think it was both soldierly as well as statesmanlike. I recall that some years ago, when you took over as Army Chief in Pakistan, I had sent a letter to you congratulating you and wishing you well, and you very kindly replied that some months later. Unfortunately, we had Kargil War soon after that. I'm not going into that part of history. And in fact, I would like to once again compliment you for the agreement that you have signed with Prime Minister Vajpayee in Islamabad. And one, you both have raised the hopes of people on both sides. I don't know, General, when Kashmir problem is going to be resolved, but I'm very keen to find out your commitment to the memorandum of understanding that was signed in Lahore on strategic weapons CBMs. I was involved in that, so I know what agreement was signed. I would like to know, how committed do you feel to that agreement which was signed in Lahore? If you I'm sure you would know that that was in substantive nature. And if we want to go ahead with that, it'll require working out more details between India and Pakistan. And if you remain committed to that, obviously that part can only take place if you give your assent. May I request your response to that? Thank you, General.
Thank you very much indeed. You've spoken about the strategic weapon CBM. The only thing that I would like to answer is, first of all, I don't know the details of what that draft is, frankly, at the moment. But when we see the future, as I said, we have to move in tandem between the CBMs and the dialogue process. If we start moving forward on the dialogue process, all CBMs can be addressed. I would not like to move fast on CBMs, any part of the CBM, if the dialogue process is not moving forward. So therefore, the strategic weapon CBM, the details of which I don't know, frankly, would certainly be a part, can certainly form a part of the overall confidence building measures in the future when we start moving forward also on the dialogue process.
Next question, I'd like Professor Amitabh Mathu to please ask that.
Good evening, Mr. President. I'm sure you will agree that if we have to build a South Asian century, then we have to ensure that the bitternesses of the past, the conflicts of the present, and the enemy images that we have inherited have to end. And we have to ensure that the younger generation doesn't get poisoned by these bitternesses of the past. Would you, in these circumstances, Mr. President, agree to a collaboration between academics and educationists between India and Pakistan to design common courses, common curricula, and common reading material to ensure that younger people of South Asia have a common, positive, peaceful vision of South Asia, whether or not, Mr. President, we resolve the Kashmir issue? I hope you will agree that this needs to be done right away. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As far as the interaction between the academics and educationists is concerned, I would totally agree that there should be interaction. I am totally in favor of people-to-people contact. And when I talk of people-to-people contact, obviously academics and educationists form a very important part of that contact. But when you're talking of going for a common syllabus and a common curriculum, now, that I never really gave thought to. I never thought of achieving a common curriculum and a common syllabus for both our countries, or for that matter, for the whole of South Asia. I don't know whether this is achievable or doable. However, since you come up with the suggestion, we don't mind looking into this. I think it needs contact between the academics and educationists to see viability of your proposal. I would encourage their contact, first of all.
Well, that's a good sign. I'd like to ask now Geeta Mehta, who's a well-known author, Mr. President, to ask a question.
Mr. President, you've spoken most eloquently about the prosperity that peace would bring our region, and indeed of the longing of the people of India and Pakistan for peace. Do you believe that a sustained peace is possible in the absence of civil liberties?
Indeed. I mean, what are we talking of civil liberties? Are you talking of civil liberties in my country or your own country or in both the countries? I really don't know. If you're talking of my country, I think there are civil liberties in place, absolutely. Every country has its own environment and it works within that environment. And I don't think civil liberties have anything to do with a peace process between India and Pakistan, they don't come into the way at all. As I said, we must believe in sovereign equality and the sovereignty of both the countries. Whatever is the internal issues of each country should not hinder what is to be done on a bilateral basis. I don't think it, in any case, the issue of civil liberties, whether in India or Pakistan, stand in the way of a peace process and moving forward on peace.
Thank you. Mr. N.K. Singh, who's a member of the Planning Commission, Mr. President, would like to ask a question.
Mr. President, no one, of course, knows the answer to the question of whether economics drives politics or politics drives economics. But as Mr. Arun Puri referred, that you made a very successful visit to Davos, speaking to the international community, speaking to the investor community, as Pakistan's economy under your distinguished leadership has begun to look up. Pakistan is seeking direct foreign investment from all parts of the world, as was evident by your interaction in Davos. But the Indian business community, which is quite close to Pakistan, is looking at many gainful investment opportunities in Pakistan in the area of pharmaceuticals, automobiles, oil and gas, telecommunication, and a whole range of things. Would you, Mr. President, in the spirit of what you said, namely taking simultaneous action on many fronts to improve the quality of our relationship, take some steps which can improve the climate of confidence for the investor, private investor community in India to look to these multiple investment opportunities in Pakistan?
Very much. Well, I think economics and politics both are important. Economics is important to every country. It lies at the core of any development. The country cannot progress unless its economy is made to move forward. But as far as politics is concerned, of course, politics is the overarching framework for any activity in a country. So therefore, they have an interrelationship. But in Pakistan, we are trying to set the economic trends or the political situation right in all its context. When you're talking of various areas of cooperation on the economic and commercial front between India and Pakistan, yes, indeed, one does recognize, and I do recognize, that there is tremendous scope for mutual benefit in on commercial and trade relationships. I mean, looking at even a gas pipeline, which you need from maybe Central Asia or from Iran or from Qatar, it's just our confrontation and our animosity which is not allowing you to get this pipeline through. If we reach, go for a rapprochement, I'm sure this avenue will be opened. And what the other areas that you have mentioned are all areas where we can mutually look into complementarities and go for mutual benefits in economic relations. I totally would be favorably inclined if at all we move forward towards, as I said, towards resolution of disputes. Now, if you are meaning the relationship of economic and politics, that we can go ahead on the economic side without resolution of disputes, without bothering about the political aspects of our relationship, I'm afraid that is not possible at all. I think there is a relationship. We have to resolve political disputes between ourselves. We have to remove this environment of suspicion from each other, and then only can we go for investments in a big way, and as I said, complementarities of commerce and trade in a fruitful manner.
Mr. President, if I may add my two bits, how about allowing media to come into your country? Magazines, newspapers, I know there are a lot of agreements, but it never really happened.
I wonder whether any newspapers and magazines of Pakistan are going to India. We need to see it as one of the confidence building measures. I mean, as far as we are concerned, I know that I've at least been telling everyone to allow maximum media personalities from India, whoever wants to come, to be allowed to come to Pakistan. I don't think that is the case when our media people want to go to India. I think there is more openness of in our accepting media people, personalities coming here. And you're talking of newspapers and magazines coming to Pakistan, and of course Pakistanis going to India. One can examine this in the CBMs in the future. We can broaden the scope of the confidence building measures. But as I said again, we have to go forward on the dialogue process. We cannot be cantering and going on a sprint on the CBMs while the dialogue process is going at snail pace. That is not doable. So there is a complementarity, there is a simultaneity and a linkage between the CBMs and the dialogue process.
Thank you, sir. May I call Mr. Naresh Chandra, former U.S. Indian ambassador to the U.S.?
Mr. President, with your permission, I would first like to convey Mr. President,
I can hear you.
With your permission, I would first like to congratulate your cricket team. They put up a great show, and if I'm not mistaken, chasing a high total, they put up 344 runs, which is some kind of a world record. And I think Inzamam and Javed and their colleagues need our congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, they did well. I think both the teams did very well.
Looking forward to much more exciting cricket in days to follow. We have all taken note of the strong leadership that you have exercised in pushing forward the current initiative. What is bothering some of us is that how broad and deep is the consensus in support of this move. And in times to come, will all sections in Pakistan support this move? And in this context, I think the earlier question about allowing free flow of information in both countries is very important, because our experience has been that the information which flows through the media might not be the best way to condition our people to be informed and to help in addressing the problems and issues that are under discussion. If you could throw some light on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you indeed for congratulating my team, Pakistan's team. As I said, both have done well, and we also in Pakistan look forward to a very interesting series in the future. On the issue of free flow of information between the two countries, I think there ought to be a free flow of information between the two countries. One point that I would like to raise here is the issue of parts of the media stopping to badmouth or creating negative perceptions between the two countries. One of my main concerns is when we know Indian cinema and many magazines also showing the negatives of Pakistan. I think we, the media on both sides need to be more mature, show more maturity in dealing in talking with issues of each other, because now that such confidence building measures and a peace process is in place, I would say that media needs to show more maturity, and I think deal with maybe encourage more closer relationship encourage a better understanding between the two countries rather than highlighting the negatives and exploiting maybe to a certain extent situation in respective countries. We should stop that and encourage better, more harmonious media interaction.
Thank you, President. Perhaps letting them open out is probably the best way. You talked about Indian films. We have, in fact, here one of the leading Indian film stars, Aishwarya Rai. She'd like to ask you a question.
Good evening, Mr. President. I'm going to be asking a question of no relevance to the fraternity I come from, not the film industry. But I would like to ask you, if I may, as a layperson, as an ordinary individual, a citizen of India, Mr. President, it's truly positive, the trend right now, as we feel there is the first steps towards camaraderie between our two nations. But sir, hamari jo tehzeeb hai, as we hug each other today, what I would like to ask you is, are we truly feeling the warm vibes of love between us, or are we still skeptical and looking over our shoulders? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's first of all, I'm very glad to be asked a question from one of the most popular film stars of India, whom one knows here in Pakistan also. Your question is related, in fact, part to the last question, which I think I did not answer. How deep the process or the desire for peace between India and Pakistan is. Let me say, I'm very sure about Pakistan. It is extremely deep. I think all sections of society in Pakistan want peace, want interaction, want harmonious relationship between India and Pakistan. When we went for these a joint statement between myself and Prime Minister Vajpayee, there was a surge in our stock exchange. There was a great optimism with the signs of hope that was emerging. I know this is the reality in all segments of society in all the provinces of Pakistan. There are some extremists now, I know that, and such extremists are also in India, and we know that also. We should not bother about that very small minority of extremists, and we must go for peace in a bold manner, because we know, and I know, that vast majority of Pakistanis are for peace, for developing harmonious relations, for going for people-to-people contact, going for commerce and trade relationships. So I'm very clear about what Pakistanis want.
Mr. President, I can safely say that most Indians want the same thing. May I request now President of CII, Confederation of Indian Industry, Anand Mahindra, to ask a question.
Mr. President, I represent a company called Mahindra & Mahindra, which was born in 1945 as Mahindra & Mohammed. And the co-founder was Ghulam Mohammed, who, after partition, left us to become, I believe, the first finance minister of Pakistan. Of course, we couldn't afford to print new letterheads which said M&M, hence the name of the company, Mahindra & Mahindra, today. But arguably, because of that history, we are amongst the most willing companies in India to collaborate, to go back to the future, as it were, and collaborate with Pakistani companies. But in my recent interactions with Pakistani businessmen, contrary to something you said earlier, I find them very apprehensive about the dismantling of trade barriers, because they believe Indian companies with their greater size will swamp them. Now, I do admit Indian businessmen had the same fears about China, but today we have a trade surplus with China. Do you, Mr. President, share those kind of concerns? And if you don't, What can you do to allay those fears of businessmen in Pakistan, and how quickly can you move to dismantle barriers?
Well, yes, this is an important question, but let me tell you, I have been asking many businessmen in Pakistan, if we were to collaborate and interact economically, in commerce and trade, business interaction, would we be swamped? The point that you've made. Those good businessmen of Pakistan, the people who have a strong business ventures in Pakistan, are very confident that they will not be swamped. So therefore, I have, I'm fairly confident and optimistic that it is not a case of us protecting ourselves from the swamping or the strength of the business community of India. We know that you are large, but we have our capacity, we have our quality also. Many good businessmen of Pakistan think that they will gain advantage through access in your market. So I think we should go ahead optimistically, and I am very sure that there are a lot of mutual benefits that will come our way. Now, the business executive or businessman that you interacted with, I don't know who you interacted with. As I told you, I know many business executives here who feel very confident of gains when we interact with you.
So does that mean, Mr. President, that opening up could be around the corner even if the Kashmir issue is not solved?
I am known in India, I think, as a unifocal person, a person who just can't forget about Kashmir. let me honestly, I feel odd also. I really feel talking of Kashmir all the time. I do understand. But let me say again, I think I would be most unrealistic if I said anything other than what I've said. No leader in Pakistan can sideline the Kashmir issue. Now this is the reality, and we cannot do it. If we think that we can go ahead on all confidence building measures and forget about Kashmir, not doable by any leader in Pakistan. We must understand that. And I'm afraid if we don't understand this basic issue, I don't think we can move forward. Let me put it very bluntly. I don't think we can move forward on the confidence building measures. I don't think we can move forward on the economic interactions unless we move forward on resolution of all disputes. All disputes, including the Kashmir dispute.
Well, that's quite clear, sir. I'd now like to ask Mr. Sunil Kilnani, who is one of the speakers at our conclave, to ask a question.
Thank you. Mr. President, in a sense, I'm picking up on a number of questions and views that have been expressed already. You must sense how we here in Delhi, as I'm sure you're in Islamabad, are deeply hopeful at the moment of historical reconciliation between our two peoples. My question is a very simple one. What do you see as being the largest obstacle to that, either in terms of substance or process? And what do you see us in India as, what would you like us to do to try and remove that obstacle?
Sorry, I didn't get your question. Obstacle in the way of normalization of relations?
Yes, in terms of achieving a reconciliation between our two peoples. What do you see, either in terms of substance or process?
I have said that entirely. My whole speech contained that. And I think the main issue is to develop confidence in each other, trust in each other, and this can only be done through resolution of disputes, all disputes. And when I say all disputes, again, I'll have to say, including the Kashmir dispute. And that is the stumbling block.
Well,
made it very clear. That is what is stopping us. That is what is impeding relationships between the two countries.
Well, let's hear the view of, or not a view, but a question from a former foreign secretary, Mr. Kamal Sibal, perhaps can get around Kashmir.
Mr. President, I listened to your speech with great attention, obviously. All of us are very hopeful about the new process that has begun between India and Pakistan. And we were asking ourselves as to what is the message that you might give us this evening. I'm not sure whether the message that you have given us enhances the sense of hope of optimism or reduces it. There has been the feeling that because of various factors, there has been a change in mindset on your side. But if one really carefully analyze what you said, there are some legitimate doubts in our mind about what we may expect from the current process, because what you've clearly said is that Kashmir remains central, and unless there's forward movement on Kashmir, nothing else effectively can move, including economic cooperation. And then you also suggested, which is a bit worrying, that in case there was no serious effort to resolve outstanding disputes, including Kashmir, the current CBN process may not move forward, and in fact we may go back to square one, as you said. Now, as you know, our major concern, as against your concern about Kashmir, has been the issue of terrorism. So I do hope that when it is suggested we may go to square one would not mean that there might be a resurgence of terrorism. Now, the question, in fact, I want to ask, and the context in which I want to ask, is that India and China are both nuclear weapon powers, yet nobody talks about nuclear tensions between India and China. India and China have an unresolved boundary question, which from our point of view is a huge problem in terms of the occupation of large parts of our territory by China. And yet, we are willing to put aside this very difficult issue and move forward with China in every possible way. Our trade with China in the last 3-4 years has in fact gone up to over $7 billion, double our trade with Japan, and the prospects are wide open of a normalization, progressive normalization of relationship between India and China, and both the countries are able to profit from this and in fact contribute very meaningfully to peace and stability in Asia as a whole. What is the difficulty that you might face, Mr. President, on your side in emulating the example of India and China?
Yes, indeed. I'm a realist, and I am a soldier, and not a diplomat also. Therefore, I believe in talking straight. I don't believe in saying things which I don't really mean from my mind and heart. I don't believe in bluffing my way through, saying something and then going back when we get onto the dialogue table. So therefore, while my words may sound very sour or very harsh to you, but let me tell you that they come from my heart. If you don't agree with them, that is a different issue altogether. When you talk of change in mindsets, if you mean that we ought to change our mindsets and forget about Kashmir, and you are comparing ourselves, the relationship between India and Pakistan, to your relationship with China, I'm afraid there's a lot of difference. Here we fought wars, we fought three wars, and there's a line of control, an issue which is a United Nations Security Council recognized dispute, existing since over 50 years. Every day when there was no ceasefire on the line of control, we were killing each other. I wonder whether you've been in Siachen. Your soldiers are there. I've been to a very big heights there. I know how life is. I know how they are killing each other there. I know all along the line of control. I've been to the front lines everywhere. Now these are realities. If we can push this reality behind and forget about all this truth, about all this reality on ground, and say let's there's nothing happening in Kashmir, just let's forget about it, and let's remove all our soldiers, and while the Indian Army carries on whatever is happening inside Kashmir, I'm afraid it's not doable. And when you talk of the threat that I am giving, that the terrorism may start, etc. No, not at all. I am not giving that threat at all. We don't think there is terrorism going on in Kashmir. We think there is a freedom struggle going on in Kashmir. So I am afraid we will get involved in all the discussions that are hackneyed now. And we must not do that. We have made a new beginning in the form of the joint statement between Prime Minister Vajpayee, your leader, and myself. The text of this joint statement is very clear. It states very clearly that Pakistan and India must resolve all disputes, including Kashmir. That Kashmir is a dispute which must be resolved to improve relations, and that Pakistan and India are party to this dispute. Now, are we saying that we are going back on this joint statement? This is written in black and white. Let's read it. Now, if we are to go back on this, now who is sidelining what? Who's changing what mindsets? We are not changing any mindsets. We are not talking of history of the past. We are moving forward. And the basis of this forward movement is the joint statement between myself and Prime Minister Vajpayee. I will adhere to this joint statement in letter and in spirit. There will be no failing on Pakistan's part or on my part to go back on any word of this joint statement. You be the judge. You read this joint statement. And let us see what happens now onwards in May, June, and then in July, August when the foreign ministers meet. It's very clear that we have to move the dialogue process forward. The whole world knows about it. So I'm afraid, let's not get involved in giving examples of China and India relationships and saying that we should just forget about disputes and start moving. You don't have much of a dispute with China. And as it is, may I say, China is a very large country. Maybe a strategy of coercion would not apply to China, between you and China, whereas it does apply to your relationship with Pakistan. And I think in the past, the issue has been, and the concerns of every Pakistani has been, the coercion that they have been suffering from your country. In our region, sir, may I say that in our region, the size of India is disproportionately large as compared to the other nations. That demands a certain magnanimity from you, from India, being the largest partner of the region. That magnanimity has to come from your side. It cannot come from smaller partners. So therefore, I think I would leave it at this. There is no change in mindsets, really. I'm talking of reality on ground. Let's not forget reality on ground. And let's not, if we see each other with sovereign equality, our concerns must be addressed. And Pakistan's concern certainly is the issue, all disputes, including Kashmir. We cannot sideline it.
Mr. President, we really appreciate your straight talk, so I hope you won't mind if I do some. One country's freedom fighter is another country's terrorist. So the people who've attacked you, attempted assassinations on you, if they reacted that they were freedom fighters, what would be your reaction?
Well, certainly my reaction will be very violent. I wish I knew them. Maybe I would have dealt with them in my own hands. One, obviously, I would oppose them. Certainly, I mean, there is no doubt in my mind. Anybody trying to undertake suicide bombings, killing innocent civilians. I would be the last person to encourage that. But I don't know whether you're equating this with what is happening in Kashmir. That is where I wouldn't agree with you.
Can we get away from Kashmir? I was referring to Kashmir, actually.
You were, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Let me call on, let's turn this a little bit. Let me call on Dr. Amit Mitra, who is the Secretary of FICCI, Chamber of Commerce of India.
Mr. President, you would be happy to know that we Indian business is today afraid of being flooded by Pakistan. How come? An exhibition from Federation of Pakistan Chamber of Commerce and Industry on Made in Pakistan visited Delhi, and 40,000 visitors swamped the exhibition, showing the kind of affection, love and commerce that we can do between each other. Only this week. However, Mr. President, I must humbly suggest that the most favored nation treaty still eludes us from the end of Pakistan, though we have signed the SAFTA agreement. Our unofficial trade, Mr. President, is approximately $1.7 billion, which should all be official trade. No lorry can go from Amritsar to Lahore. There's not even a warehouse in the no man's land. In other words, the potential is there, but we are differing. Could you give us, in few words, what is your exact vision of opening up, what measures you wish to take towards the synergy between our two economies in specific terms, Mr. President? Thank you.
Thank you. Certainly there's a lot of synergy. And I'm very glad if somebody in India thinks that Pakistan can swamp the Indian markets. I'm very glad at this. Yes, we have some potential, some areas of strength, which can be of use to benefit Pakistan. But I think opening up trade and commercial relations will benefit both the countries. We will have a large market, certainly, because you are about 1 billion strength. But at the same time, your products will find certainly a market in Pakistan. So it will be to the benefit, mutual benefit of both. But as I said, when you talk of vision, I have given my vision. I don't want to repeat it. There is certainly a linkage between political relationships between the two countries and economic activity and commercial activity. You cannot isolate the two. I mean, when there is hatred between the two countries, we are killing each other, as I said, daily. We have fought wars. We don't like each other. We have just played a cricket match after 15 years. How can you think it can be milk and honey in just few days? And it can be milk and honey without resolving those disputes? I think we are not being realistic. And that is all that I am saying. I know that all of you sitting there may be getting disappointed because I am saying I'm talking of same things, of removing the confrontational aspects of the relationship. But I will repeat. I am a realist, and I believe in a practicable approach to problems. We have to resolve disputes and then go forward to commercial, economic, trade relationships. This is my vision. I don't think one can we can sideline the political aspect of our relationship and go only on our economic and trade and commercial relationship. That is not practical, that is not doable. It is very unrealistic. I mean, that is my vision.
Sir, it seems to me that whenever Indians and Pakistanis meet, or they go visit each other's countries. There's a lot of love, there's a lot of affection, great amount of hospitality. And it sometimes seems that it's the politicians who are getting in the way. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, I said that. I said that in my initial statement, that the problem is with the leadership, yes. The people want to have peace and harmony. But if you come here and say that you just forget about Kashmir, I can tell you that the answer that you'll get will be different. That if you come and say here that forget about any all political disputes, let's have good economic relations, you're going to get a different answer. What the hope and the positive optimism that has developed now is because people here think that we are going to resolve all our disputes. It is not only because we are going to develop economic and commercial ties between each other. The optimism is, and I will repeat, is mainly because people here have started thinking that our disputes are going to be resolved.
Just to, I believe Indian films are very popular in Pakistan. We have here one of the leading film directors and producers, Mr. Subhash Ghai, who would like to ask you a question.
To be very brief, we all know that we have been fighting wars and facing political differences. But as a movie maker, as a writer, director, producer, I always felt that our movies, music, and our stories have been receiving a warm welcome by the people of Pakistan. Somewhere by heart, we are the same. By culture, we are very close to each other. And it would be a really very, very happy news for the film industry, for the artists, for technicians, and if we can really join hands and make movies together for each other in future. What do you think the future of welcoming each other if everything is settled down? Thank you.
There is scope. I think on the cultural interaction, there is a lot of scope. When you're talking of your films being popular in Pakistan, yes, they are popular in Pakistan. But let me also say that the war movies and the Kashmir movies that you produce are not held in good stead here at all. Because I think you make, and I don't want to be very blunt, I don't think you are realistic at all. And I think you try to portray or try to ridicule our forces, which is not at all held in good stead here. And you overdo it in many of your movies. I haven't seen many. I did see one, I don't want to name it, because there was so much talk about it. And I found it to be absolutely absurd. And I would request Aishwarya Rai, who's sitting there, not to act in such movies. I think they are quite ridiculous when you come to, because they are most unrealistic. They are absolutely unrealistic, and I wouldn't like an artist of your stature, Aishwarya, to be acting in such movies. I think there should be some balance in portrayal.
So Mr. President, does that mean you will allow love stories to be distributed in Pakistan? Yeah. Barring war films.
Things are absolutely all right, as long as they are a little realistic. I mean, they shouldn't be absolutely, totally unrealistic and one-sided, that you are dealing with pygmies on the other side and there are heroes going around on the other side. I mean, let's be a little realistic.
Let me ask a person from our journalistic community, Shekhar Gupta, to ask a question.
Yes, Mr. President, let me try and shift the subject from something as contentious as Kashmir to something on which there should be greater unanimity, namely democracy. This is an unusual year. 72 nations around the world are going for elections, the most ever in human history. Second point, no two democracies in our history have ever gone to war with each other. And third, of the countries going to elections this year is also India. So my question is, in this great global march towards democratization, don't you feel that your country is getting badly left behind? Two, if so, what is it that you plan to do to bring in more democracy in Pakistan? Maybe that would even further the cause of peace, because democracies don't go to war with each other. Third, do you have any anxieties about Indian elections? Elections throw surprises. You can presume nothing. So are you brushing up your Italian a bit? And for the easier part of my question, will you announce one more easy CBM, which does not have to wait the solution of Kashmir problem, and allow telecast in Pakistan? Why deprive your people of the entertainment that our politicians can provide? Very often it's better than our cricketers. And sir, having said that, if you permit me, a little note of correction. You said that from Agra to Islamabad, India moved a notch in accepting the centrality of Kashmir. I am an independent observer. I also have access to some drafts, as I am sure your senior judge. I would like to also suggest that Pakistan moved a great deal, in fact, from Agra to Islamabad in giving on cross-border terrorism, which it had never given in the past.
Okay. Let me answer the last part first. I have always, about 100 times, in United Nations, every forum, been saying that Pakistan is not at all in favor of any kind of export of terrorism from Pakistan into any other area. I've been saying that all along. And I have also clearly been differentiating between what is happening in Kashmir. We in Pakistan don't call that cross-border terrorism. We call it a freedom struggle. So I don't think we have changed our stance. However, I mean, let's not dispute or let's not tear this very sacrosanct document apart. There is a joint statement which has been initiated between Prime Minister Vajpayee and myself. I think it's a very good way forward. We must not try to undermine its value through extracting bugs in this document. So I will leave it at that. I think the document is very good and it's a good way forward. Now, when you started by talking about democracy, I take very strong exception to this. If you think that there is no democracy in Pakistan, I'm afraid I don't agree with that at all. So I don't even want to answer this question. There is democracy in Pakistan. Elections have been held in Pakistan, and everything is being done in a very democratic manner. Democracy believes in human rights. I think the human rights here are maybe in many ways better than human rights in your country. Freedom and freedom of speech, freedom of media, freedom of expression, maybe in many ways is more than your country's. So that is also a part of democracy. Other than that, if you're talking of other issues, the constitutional issues, parliamentary issues, I think everything that your country is going through is happening here also. I think I don't agree with you at all if you are meaning that there is no democracy in Pakistan and we need to move towards democracy. We have our own environment, and also, may I say, we don't accept anybody from outside Pakistan to meddle in our internal affairs. We run our country the way we like it to be run, and we don't expect any other country to interfere. If I was to tell you that you need to look after minorities in your country, you need to stop carnage going on in Kashmir and in Gujarat, how would you feel about it? You need to ensure more human rights by not be attacking Sikhs in the Golden Temple, by not destroying the Ayodhya Mosque. I mean, I don't, we don't want to interfere in your internal affairs. So why are you interfering in our internal affairs, whether there should be democracy or no democracy? We deal with sovereign equality. We deal in our country's internal affairs as we want. So please don't get involved in what we are doing in our own country. Beyond this, the relationship between our two countries have to be developed based on the joint statement arrived at between Prime Minister Vajpayee and myself. Pakistan will move forward on each and every aspect of that, and we look forward to a very good start. Whether there is democracy in 72 countries and holding elections, we've already held our elections in and the next elections are due in 2007. We will do that on time. Our local body elections are due next year. We will hold them in time. So I don't really know what you are inferring when you say that the elections are being held in so many countries, and so how does it pertain to Pakistan? I don't know.
I don't want to interfere in your internal affairs, but could I just, for my information, know whether former Prime Ministers Benazir Bhutto and Nawaz Sharif could return to Pakistan?
Benazir has gone out on her own volition. We didn't send her out. She went out herself during the previous government's term. There are certain charges that are there against her, and she has to face those charges. Nobody has told her not to come back. As far as Nawaz Sharif is concerned, he has gone back through the mediation of a friendly country and a friendly leader. And he also went laughing all the way on his own volition. The whole family went there. And they are there on their own accord, with their own sweet will. And they can only come back when this agreement mediated by this friend comes to an end.
I'd like to call on the former High Commissioner to Pakistan, Mr. G. Parthasarathy. I'd like to ask the question.
Good evening, Mr. President. I have three separate questions to ask you, very specific. After the recent controversy which we've had about Pakistani scientists being involved in nuclear proliferation, the question has arisen of greater transparency in Pakistan's nuclear policies. Could you let us know when and if Pakistan will have a formal nuclear doctrine instead of continuously saying that Kashmir is a nuclear flashpoint, whatever that may mean? My second question, Mr. President, is you spoke of the fight against terrorism in Afghanistan and you're taking on the Al-Qaeda on Pakistani soil. The Americans and the Afghans also speak of a Taliban presence in Pakistani soil. Do you intend to take them on as firmly as you intend to take on the Al-Qaeda? And the lastly, third question, Mr. President, I come from southern India, where we have no relatives in Pakistan, and the present visa policies are very restrictive, only for friends and relatives. Don't you think if we want to get to know each other better, we should have normal tourism like any other two countries would have? Thank you.
Very much. On the nuclear doctrine, we very much have a nuclear doctrine. I don't know how you think that Pakistan hasn't even got a nuclear doctrine. Let me tell you that our strategic assets, the command and control, the custodial controls that we have established, may be better than yours. And these are all documented as far as the nuclear doctrine itself is very much there. So I think you are misinformed. We have a doctrine. And it has no relationship with the Kashmir dispute as such. As I said, we have a defensive strategy of minimum defensive deterrence, and that is what we are following. Talking of Al-Qaeda and Taliban, Yes, we are operating against Al-Qaeda in our tribal region in the frontier province. When we talk of Taliban and whether we are going to act against them, this term Taliban is the most misunderstood term. When you say Taliban, who are you meaning really? I would like to ask you, who are you meaning when you say Taliban? If you are meaning all the Talibs, which are the products of the students studying in our madrasas, they are Taliban. If you are meaning all of them, certainly we are not acting against them. If you are meaning all the Pakhtuns in Afghanistan, certainly we are not acting against them at all. So who are the Taliban really? So we identify Taliban, as far as we are concerned, very clearly. This is the previous Mullah Umar's government, their abettors, their supporters. We will not encourage them to be here at all. We will not allow them in Pakistan. And we will certainly arrest them and send them back or deport them to Afghanistan, as we did in one or two cases where we did catch a few of their members and send them back to the Afghan government. We will act against them, certainly. I've said that we will act against any non-Pakistani in Pakistan. That includes anybody, whether it is Al-Qaeda or Taliban. But we need to be clear on what we mean by Taliban. The last item, the last issue that you raised was the visa issue. Our visa restrictions are complementary. I think all restrictions somehow are the same. You lay down similar restrictions and we do the same. I think when we go for confidence building measures, we move forward on resolution of disputes. I am very clear that these issues of visas will be getting resolved more amicably in the future.
At least that's not tied up with Kashmir. I'd like to request Mr. Rajinder Pawar. He's an eminent businessman of India. I'd like to ask you a question.
Mr. President, before I talk about information technology, which is the subject that I'm involved with, I do want to make an observation. Right through these last 45 minutes, I experienced periods of joy and periods of sadness. Whenever we were talking of cold logic and reasoning, I felt very sad. Whenever we shared any moment which was about emotion and feelings, I felt very good. I think that's really been the situation between these two countries for a long time. So while we were rejoicing and enjoying the game of cricket, the moment we start discussing logic and reason, we just seem to be going backward. In some sense, the new dialogue, which is opening many fronts, a lot to do with feelings and emotion, and some to do with logic, I think the balance is valid. But I tend to feel that if you can give feelings a bit of a lead, logic will follow. There's an old saying which says that the way the East thinks and the way the West thinks is different in one respect. You say in the East, have faith and proof follows. And in the West, we've said that we believe that have proof and faith follows. My humble suggestion is that as we get into this very important phase of breakthrough, I see it as an opportunity of breakthrough, let's not try to overbalance feeling with logic and emotion. If we have to make a little bit of a difference in these two, let the feelings come forward, because I think the warmth which is getting generated and can get generated will resolve the tricky problems we're trying to solve. That was just an observation. On information technology, I think there are opportunities. India is surging ahead. We are beginning to find tremendous opportunity for people in India as we look at the outsourcing business opportunities in the West. From India, we are already beginning to look at building development centers outside of India. And we are talking of Philippines, we are talking all the way of China as well. It is only natural for us to look at Pakistan as a partner in this. This is also a field where you don't need to move too many goods, too many bodies. Connection can be established, work can be done from virtually. I believe that this is an area where cooperation could be very rapid and very quick. And yet it's not figuring among the important points for discussion. I'd like to know your specific view on whether you think the whole field of IT is something we should get a much more serious look on how we could do collaboration. I'd like to hear your views on this.
Thank you very much for your idea of logic and emotions. I think both are important and they are interlinked. We cannot set logic aside and go only on the path of emotions because they will fail. However, I take your point. I do take your point. Coming to the issue of information technology, I do know that India is doing very well in information technology. Pakistan now in the last 3 or 4 years that my government was in place, we developed an infrastructure, information technology infrastructure, and we trained our manpower also. And I think we have tremendous potential in information technology, in the development of information technology. And I very much agree with you that this is one area where we can collaborate for our mutual benefit. We certainly, when we move forward on economic or commercial interaction, information technology has a lot of complementarity to benefit both of us, and we would like to move forward on this.
That's positive. I'd like to now call on Mr. Jay Panda. He's a young MP in our parliament. Mr. President, he'd like to ask a question.
Mr. Musharraf, we Indians...
President.
Mr. President, we Indians have long had a secret and grudging admiration for you, for your vigorous, energetic, and nimble style of leadership which you have demonstrated. But it is that very nimbleness with words and sometimes facts that has some of us wondering how serious you are about peace. And then that other issue that Mr. Shekhar Gupta raised about democracy, even accepting that Pakistan today is on the has a democracy and is evolving, by your own statements, there is a further evolution expected when perhaps you will cease to have two posts as both the chief of the armed forces as well as president. Now, some people think that we should take advantage of this period while you do have both posts. And some people think that, well, perhaps democracy ought to have that further step of evolution which you yourself have announced before we can really have a chance for peace. So tell us, Mr. President, why are you the best person for us to deal with and deal with now to have peace?
Thank you very much. First issue of how serious I am about peace and the doubts that you have that maybe I'm not serious about peace. Well, let me put it bluntly that we have very serious doubts that you're not serious about peace. So who is right and who is wrong? I don't know. So that is what I say, that there are suspicions on both sides. We think that you are following a strategy which will do good to you and sideline issues, sideline disputes, and you are not serious about peace. This is the main suspicion of Pakistanis here. But similar is your suspicion when you say that you think that I am not serious of peace. Now, I feel it's very odd that you sometimes in India and even now in this forum, I feel a little bit of a ridicule when one talks of Kashmir, as if this is something that is so, such an unimportant issue which is being spoken about unnecessarily over and over again. This increases our suspicions that what we've written in the joint press statement between myself and Prime Minister Vajpayee, maybe you don't mean it. Maybe the people of India don't mean it. When we've written that Kashmir is a dispute which needs to be resolved, maybe you don't mean it. Because this is our suspicion exactly. It has existed in the past. And now, when in this such a this elite August forum, if everyone thinks that is, it's a very minor irritant that I am raising unnecessarily and trying to emphasize it unnecessarily, it disappoints me. It disheartens me. It saddens me also that we maybe don't want to resolve it, and we think that we can go forward on all issues. So let me say again, with all my conviction, I am very serious about peace. But if your version of peace is, don't resolve political disputes, that is not my version of peace. So there is a difference we need to sit down and clarify and really reach an understanding before we proceed further. I only hope that Prime Minister Vajpayee and interlocutors, the foreign secretary, the foreign minister, who foreign ministers who are going to interact, are very clear in their minds on what we have decided in that joint statement, and we move forward on that. What I have told you on the simultaneity, on the linkage between confidence building measures and the dialogue process, is nothing new, let me tell you. I have verbatim said this to Prime Minister Vajpayee also. I am not saying something new to you, which I haven't said to anyone else. And this has exactly been told to your foreign secretary also when he came here. And it will exactly be told to your foreign minister when he meets my foreign minister. So really, I mean, let's be very clear. If we think that we can just go on economic ties, cultural ties and relationships, media interaction, exchange of films, exchange of artists, and that is all, I'm afraid we are the most unrealistic people. We haven't succeeded in the last 50 years. I don't know whether we'll take another 50 or 100 years to succeed again. I'm not the man who can really sit here and be unrealistic and impractical and don't address issues and hide my feelings, be hypocritical when I come in front of anyone, whether it's on the negotiating table or an August gathering like this. I'm not that. I try to be realistic, but in my realism, if you think that I'm being very stubborn, very obstinate, not understanding your point of view, I am very much understanding your point of view. I very much understand the realities on ground, and I very much want also do understand what is the way forward. But I don't think the way forward is as you people are thinking. That disappoints me. And the faster we understand and are prepared to be bold enough to face realities on ground, that much the better. Otherwise, I mean, when I say we wouldn't be able to move forward, I'm not trying to raise alarms. I'm just trying to be realistic. It will not happen, not because I don't want it, because those are the realities which have existed for 50 years and cannot be sidelined and forgotten. So if you think they can, well, okay, let's try. But I'm afraid we'll fail again. I don't want to fail, but let's leave it at this. I mean, this is my feeling. I only hope with all my seriousness, with all my sincerity, that we move forward on the path of peace.
I'm afraid we're running out of time. I would like to take this opportunity of thanking President Musharraf for spending so much time with us, for answering questions just so well in terms of being straight, analytical, no punches pulled. I think the message was very clear. The fact that Kashmir is a central issue, there's no running away from it, and I think that that's something which the government of India well realizes. I think also the fact that he is referring to the document signed in Islamabad and is going to implement it by the letter is also a great sign of optimism for us and hope. And that he's serious about stopping cross-border terrorism, I think, is another great hope for us. I think that if the governments of India and Pakistan talk the way President Musharraf has spoken to us, that they've talked straightforwardly, openly, and not played games with each other, I think there's going to be a hope that even an intractable problem like Kashmir can be solved, or at least if not solved, we can continue to talk about it or how to solve it. But it requires straight talk. I think President Musharraf has set a great example for this to show how it can be done. I'd like to thank you, sir, for spending this time. I only have one little request, that please don't tie up Kashmir with opening up films, media, and all those soft issues, especially when the beautiful Aishwarya Rai has requested you, sir, to open it up. Please do think about it. I thank you again. Thank you, President Musharraf. Please give him a standing ovation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. If you are still hearing me, I would like to say that forums like this do play a very important role in developing understanding. All that I would request, let's be very realistic, let's be very pragmatic, let's be very bold to resolve disputes and go forward on the path that you yourselves want and Pakistanis want. You won't find me not being bold and not being sincere. I thank you all, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
روزنامہ پوسٹ انٹرنیشنل پاکستان کی بے مثال کامیابی کے بعد روزنامہ پوسٹ انٹرنیشنل آج ہی اپنے حق سے طلب کریں فون
545-0081.